Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. Sorry for the short introduction there with the song Tonight. But we do have a special edition of Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can go to the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And also please visit the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And where after the show tonight, you will be able to get a link to this show to listen to the archive. Or, of course, you can listen to the archive through Blog Talk Radio. Now, tonight we have an addition on to a previous episode that we had back in January. So this show tonight that we will replay is going to be for those who missed that show that night. And what it was is the last line of defense, the sheriff. And we're just pulling out there, if one understands that the sheriff is the supreme law enforcement officer of the county, and that he or she respects the Constitution, gun confiscation fears become mute. For example, Sheriff Joe Apaglio has a very large posse composed of WDI citizens. On the show, we had Sheriff Jeff Christopher of Sussex County in Delaware, who sued the state of Delaware after the state legislature removed arrest powers from the office of the sheriff. Also tonight, we will have Attorney Carson Tucker and special counsel for Sheriff Christopher. And also tonight, for our edition, we have a very special guest tonight, and that is Kelly Mordecai. I'm sure you've heard him do some panels here on Bard's Logic Political Talk before. And he also is the author of the book and website, HiddenFourthBranch.com at www.HiddenFourthBranch.com. And so at this time, I will turn on his mic so that he can go. Your mic is live. Thank you very much, Kelly.
Hey, Robert. Good to be with you here. Yeah, I'm special because I took special ed. Let's see here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just love our sheriff, Sheriff Lopey. He is one of the highest decorated sheriffs in all of California. He was a Vietnam vet. He went in the Army Reserve. He served in Iraq. He has taken his constitutional oath many, many times, and he takes it seriously. The good news is about a week or 10 days after he was on Bard's Logic, he wrote a letter to Vice President Biden. And, of course, it made front news story here in our local Siskiyou Daily News here in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, other sheriffs are doing the same thing. But I want to read you some excerpts of this because, I mean, this is just, I'm so fortunate to live here where we are surrounded, not just this county, but other counties by constitutionally minded sheriffs. Yeah, here we go. Here's excerpts from his letter. Dear Mr. Vice President, the purpose of this letter is to advise you that as a duly elected sheriff coroner of Siskiyou County, California, I am strongly opposed to your proposals to violate the constitutional rights of the citizens I serve by infringing upon their Second Amendment rights. And he goes on how many times he's taken the constitutional oath, not just here, but in other parts of the state, L.A., Vacaville. All right. And again, he just says this, I'm summarizing, he actually got an award from Obama for 30 years of commissioned service in the military. So that's an obvious award from the president himself. He also goes on to write, I can assure you that most law enforcement professionals, especially at the street level, will tell you that your idea of robbing honest, law-abiding citizens of their Second Amendment rights will not prevent violent acts and will actually increase victimization, because you are essentially disarming good citizens and their right and capacity to defend themselves and their families from predators in society. And he's going on, I am extremely disappointed that many elected representatives practice such a disregard for the United States Constitution and Bill of Rights. Well, moreover, what happened to the supreme law of the land? He went on to cite District of Columbia versus Heller, McDonald versus Chicago, which I read in Chicago. Grab the guns through any handguns. That didn't work. Supreme Court struck down what Chicago was trying to do. All right, going on in this letter, I have researched this topic throughout my career, which includes locations in L.A., Oakland, et cetera, et cetera. It is ironic that the city with some of the most restrictive gun laws in the nation also have the highest murder rates. Example would be Chicago, Illinois, and D.C. I've also researched the crime in other countries, the U.K., Australia, and New Zealand. This is a real problem. It is apparent that any research your committee undertook, again, this is a letter to the Vice President, Joe Biden. It is apparent that any research your committee undertook during the short time period between the tragic shooting in Newtown has not been adequate to justify the disintegration of the Second Amendment or the disarming of citizens we are supposed to serve, and we are contemplating a course of action which will deprive the personal property without due process. This is my comment. That's the Fourth Amendment, right? Anyway, he goes on to say, in conclusion, the last paragraph, I am opposed to this usurpation of the constitutional rights of my citizens and will oppose any attempt to impose unconstitutional provisions on the fine citizens of Siskiyou County. Our citizens deserve much more than what they are getting and their elected representatives, and it is time to do what is right and support them. We should punish criminals, not law-abiding citizens. And so this was obviously front page news. When he goes for re-election, he's probably going to get an 80% victory of the election results. I mean, this guy, he obviously
right.
wrote the Constitution. And I got friends in law enforcement here, sheriff deputies, and they are very upset about these gun grabbers. And they're also behind Sheriff Lopey. So we got the citizenry behind our sheriff. We've got deputies behind the sheriff. We are very rural. And the response time can be half an hour, 45 minutes. And so we understand our need for guns. It's there's a song, country western song. Josh, what's his name? And the song goes, our houses are protected by the good Lord and a gun. You might meet them both if you show up here to welcome, son. So that's the way we live up here, and our sheriff is stepping up to the plate. This movement is moving forward, other recon I'm getting from other people, so it's rather exciting what the sheriff can do. So I guess with that, I'll just turn it over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Khalif, for coming on and giving us that addition. And also somewhat of an update as well, since you said he did write that letter just a few weeks after, Bard's Logic, the show we're talking about tonight here on Bard's Logic. And also, I'll go ahead and give you an opportunity for a plug of your book. And also, is it still under construction, doing some more additions there for your website as well?
Yeah, I'm going to redo the website, make it a little more easier to understand. But I've been absent for a while because of there's a guy that was thrown in jail for selling salt. It was a form of salt, sodium chloride. He had a dozen competitors. This product's been available for sale for 80 years, and all of a sudden the FDA wants to shut him down. So I've been buried in trying to help him get out of jail with a special motion. He tried to appear before the grand jury 3 times to tell his side of the story, and the U.S. prosecution, that would be the Attorney General's office, would not allow this, violating his First Amendment right of petition. We can go into this another day, that we've got a government out of control. But that's for a whole other show, another day.
When you get all that together, definitely send me a message, and we'll cover that, because we want to bring that information out to the people. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, my big kudos for Sheriff Lopey, and there are other sheriffs. And I've said this before in what you're about to hear, but I want to say it again. Meet these guys. Befriend them if you know anybody who's a deputy. They need our support because they don't like this, the gun grab ideas. They don't like that. And we get behind them and support them. They're going to step forward, as John Lopey has. And I think Sheriff Lopey being on Bard's Logic here, I think that actually inspired him, maybe pushed him over the edge to go ahead and write this letter. So, support our sheriffs, law enforcement, wherever you can, so they can protect us against if things go really bad and the excrement hits a rotating oscillatory device, they can protect us from the feds. So that's about all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much once again. And definitely check out the book's on Amazon, right? The Hidden Fourth Branch?
Yep, you can just type in Hidden Fourth Branch, the number 4TH, HiddenFourthBranch.com. And that can also be used by the sheriff, of course. You'll hear that coming up.
Okay, great. And speaking of that, I will go ahead and thank you once again, Kelly, and I will mute our mics so that we can listen to the show there about the last line of defense, as you alluded to, the sheriff. So for those who have not had the opportunity to listen to that show that was previously cast, this is now the opportunity. The reason I'm playing this once again as a rebroadcast is it's some very important information that you will hear in it, and so I wanted to share again with the audience. So take care, Kelly. I definitely want to do some other shows with you on what you're talking about earlier and, of course, other topics, and we look forward to seeing you and those in the audience again as well. So without further ado, I will start that episode, and thank you very much, and here we go, folks.
All right, buddy.
Take care.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender.
Folks, and thank you once again for coming to a Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network on www.patriotjournalist.com. And you can also find the website to Bard's Logic Political Talk by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And there you can go to a few pages such as the Get Involved page and see some links and some videos. One of those videos goes to a website called the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which for only $50 a year, you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. It's a wonderful organization. I ask that folks go check it out, and you can find that by going to the Get Involved page on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And there you can click a button that says Save an Elephant, as well as enjoy a movie there or video in which you'll be able to watch one of the rescues. And also for coming up shows on January the 17th, which is next Thursday, we will have a special guest on. Her name is Julia Newman. Some of you might have heard of her works from she composes the music for the show Bones, which is on the Fox Network. And she will be coming on to the show for an interview next Thursday, the 17th. And once again, that's Julia Newman. And of course, you can see her page at www.julianewman.com. And she spells her last name Newman, N-E-W-M-A-N-N, with two N's. So check it out, and then also check out next week's show to hear the interview with her. Now, tonight, we have many special guests that you will hear, and we will be talking about sheriffs as the last line of defense. And if one understands that the sheriff is the supreme law enforcement officer in the county, and that respects the Constitution, gun confiscation fears become you. For example, Sheriff Joe Aparlio has a very large posse, is a very large posse composed of deputized citizens. And we will have some sheriffs joining us tonight. But first, I will be opening up the mic to a very good friend of mine, and also someone I'm sure you folks have learned to listen to and to like, and that is Kelly Mordecai. Of course, he's got the book out, The Hidden Fourth Branch, and you can also check out his website at www.hiddenfourthbranch.com, And Kelly, at this time, I will leave it to you. Thank you very much for calling in and setting things up for tonight's show, because this is the people's show. So go ahead.
Well, thanks, Robert. I'm really excited. I'm beyond excited. And you talk about funding elephants, you know, that might not be a bad idea. We have a potential lawsuit in Delaware going on with Sheriff Jeff Christopher. He'll be joining us shortly, as well as his legal counsel, Carson Tucker. The Delaware State Legislature, in their infinite wisdom, decided to take the arrest power away from the county sheriff. Now, what does that mean for you and me? Well, the sheriff is the supreme law enforcement officer of the county, and there up in Klamath County, Oregon, near where I live, there was a federal agent who was arrested by a sheriff. There's some little petty details I won't go into. But the sheriff actually holds his power. Now, the concern is, you know, gun legislation, et cetera, gun grabs. What scares me in a very possible scenario, okay, just down the road, 5 years, maybe sooner, the arrest powers are taken away from one state, then the next, and the state is really, really poor, so the feds decide to give a lot of money to, say, the state of Delaware, under the conditions, contractual terms for this money, go start grabbing the guns. We'll work with your state troopers, and we'll send in federal agents. Well, when the sheriff has his arrest power, as historically will be explained by Special Counsel Tucker, as well as Sheriff Christopher, they can't do that. So I want to hopefully we got them online now. Carson and Sheriff Christopher, are you there?
Yeah, I will be opening up his mic. Go ahead, Sheriff Christopher. Is he there? Let me check another one of the mics. I believe I opened up Carson Tucker's mic, but here I'll go and open up the sheriff's as well. Go ahead, both your mics are live.
Good evening, Sheriff Christopher here.
Hello, this is Carson
Tucker. Good evening.
Hello, Sheriff Christopher also here.
Well, great.
Go ahead,
great.
Kelly.
I know Carson was having some cell phone something earlier, calling technical difficulties. He'll probably be joining us. But, yeah.
Can you guys hear me? This is Carson. I'm here.
Oh, good, good. Okay, good, good. Well, yeah, why don't you guys tell us about yourself a little bit? You know, a little bit of background.
Go ahead, Carson.
Okay.
Let them know.
Okay, hey, this is Carson Tucker. I'm a lawyer in Michigan. Got involved with defending county sheriffs over in Wayne County, Michigan, when the county executive officer attempted to restrain the sheriff's budget and remove jail correctional officers from his staff. And having failed to do that, when we brought a mandamus action on behalf of the sheriff to stop him from doing so, went after the sheriff's executive staff. And the sheriff's executive staff is a privileged staff. So I got involved in this this lawsuit as well. We filed another lawsuit to stop him from doing that. And over the course of a couple of years, starting in 2009, I began to educate myself on the constitutional common law powers of the county sheriff in the United States and what that particular designation means in particular for America, because the county sheriff wasn't the county sheriff, but the sheriff, the office of sheriff has existed prior to the Norman conquest in England. It was an office that was held in very high regard. In fact, the sheriffs had judicial powers back then until the passage of the Magna Carta. Now, when the Magna Carta was passed, they removed the sheriff's judicial authority, but not his authority to enforce the law and conserve the peace on behalf of the people in his shire or county, as the case may be. What happened in America when the individual states, through the plan of the Constitutional Convention, got together and passed their state constitutions, they named the sheriff as a constitutional officer to serve as the chief executive law enforcement officer on behalf of the county and the citizens in that county who elected their chief law enforcement officer. And what this did was give the sheriff in the states, in the United States of America, what I call the constitutional imperative. And what that means is that all of the common law powers, the primary one of which being the power of arrest, was forever ingrained and preserved in the states the respective states' constitutional hierarchies such that the only means to remove that power is through constitutional amendment. And so I practice law. I defend law enforcement officers. I defend governmental entities, governmental agencies, but I also defend county sheriffs and have, again, as I said, come to appreciate the essential role in preservation of our republic that the county sheriffs have through the wisdom of our founding fathers, who saw to it that each respective state would have the ability to do this. So, and Sheriff Christopher and I have talked many times, and like I said, I represent several county sheriffs in Michigan, and this is an uphill battle, because I think the collective ignorance of the legislature, the legislators of the respective states, the judiciary as well, don't really appreciate this constitutional imperative that the sheriffs have. And so,
Carson Tucker, may I call you Counsel Tucker? What's really neat is what you understand, you now have a situation and a sheriff, obviously Sheriff Christopher, that is willing to stand for the principles you believe in. And I just kind of want to get his background a little bit, how he came to understand this power in his line of work, if you will, and where you guys are going with it. So go ahead.
Sure.
Good
evening, and thank you for having me on the show. I guess I could start out by saying that I'm a 27-year veteran of police work. I went through the ranks, came to the academy in the early 80s in Maryland, and I worked as a police officer on the road and worked my way up through the ranks and became the chief of police. And after I decided to retire, or semi-retire, because I still hold a certification there, I decided when we moved just over the line into Delaware from Maryland, we moved into Sussex County, and that geographically located at the bottom end of the state, just before it connects into the Worcester and Wicomico County areas, which is where Ocean City is located, for those of you who may understand that the terminology as far as the beach is concerned. But the one thing, I did have a short stint in the sheriff's office prior to me becoming the sheriff as a chief deputy. And I learned a lot by coming in there and realizing how much pressure was put on the sheriff and the sheriff's office by a tradition only, not so much by the law, but just simply by the way that they said, this is how we do it. And I noticed that the primary law enforcement role was taken on by the state police. And not to degrade the state police, but I can see a system there when I'm so used to in Maryland, municipal police, county sheriffs, and the state police all working together in that state. It works so well and functions so well. And I noticed in Delaware that there was something lacking there, and that was an interposer, if you will. And I came to know the role of the sheriff after learning much about the powers of the sheriff after I became the chief deputy. I learned and read up on the issue of the sheriff and what the role of the sheriff was, not just as a law enforcement officer or a minister of the courts or service of the courts. I also learned that the sheriff's constitutional role was to act as an interposer between an overreaching government and the people themselves. And what I see in Delaware is a lot of that going on and had been going on, and I wondered, what in the world caused it to be such a way. And I can only point my finger to the tradition that had gone down the wrong road, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of the late 70s, in so much as what we can determine, a lot of the role of the sheriff was diminished into a money-making process for the county by way of mortgage foreclosures. And it was a very lucrative thing, and to this day is a very lucrative process to bring revenue into the county. But I started to realize, too, that bringing revenue into the county at the expense of people losing their homes over processes that were not proper or didn't seem proper. I decided, not just for that reason, but for many other reasons, to get involved. So I ran for sheriff. Interestingly enough, I couldn't get anyone to endorse me because they didn't want to upset the apple cart as it stood today. By way of tradition, the sheriff taking the second role and not really doing anything in the way of law enforcement. There had been sheriffs in the past. We've shown and repeatedly shown arrests and different things that took place in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then the latter part of the 70s, early part of the 80s, a lot of the sheriffs basically said to themselves that had been elected as a favor, if you will, to a lot of politicians. They would endorse them to get them in and didn't expect too much from them. So we didn't get too much in the way of previous law enforcement experience. They just wanted someone to fill that role so that they could continue to bring the revenue into the county.
Wow. Well, one thing I liked when we talked on the phone last week, and by the way, folks, both of these gentlemen, when I initially talked with them, they each gave me well over an hour of their time, and they definitely loved the Constitution. But Sheriff Christopher, one thing I really liked, your summary last week when we talked, was that you wanted to find out what your real role was, what your real purpose was, and that is what you sought. And then you came across Carson Tucker, and I guess here we are today. But like that you're pursuing your constitutional duty.
Well, thank you. And it's one thing I learned by way of basically studying this whole thing about sheriffs. I learned of several people doing the same thing across the country and across the nation. I learned of Sheriff Mack and the godsend of Carson Tucker and his knowledge and the things that he brought to me as far as the light on this situation. We noted that in Delaware, the sheriff is specifically enumerated in Article 15 of the Delaware Constitution, and it says the sheriff shall be the conservator of the peace, along with the chancellors, the judges, and the attorney general, all of which you'll notice has been thrown into, or under that article, thrown into a gathering, if you will, of persons or elected bodies for the judicial system and how it was supposed to work. Now, keep in mind that state police were not even brought to light into fruition until the 1930s, the middle 30s. And the sheriff's office has existed in Sussex County, Delaware, since 1669 and played a very important role in the trade routes and what have you that were established by the early founders of the country. And that enumeration basically led me to understand and study the Constitution and of course, the brought me to the Tenth Amendment and a lot of other states. And my detractors kept telling me that conservator of the peace is not defined in Delaware law, which I'll show you in a second that it is, and that in particular that the term conservator of the peace did not mean police officer. In fact, they pointed to a section in the Delaware law under Title 11 that said, for purposes of this chapter, the attendance of the Delaware State Police did not include, or basically they excluded the sheriff for whatever reasons they had, and denoted that he was not a police officer or entitled as a police officer at the time. And I didn't really argue that fact. But as far as conservator of the peace or peace officer, I argued that because of case law and common law and how it's defined in common law, and of course, ultimately the Article 15 stating that he's the conservator of the peace. And later I found in that Title 11 when it defined the Delaware State Police, now this was up until 2006, and I'll explain to you what happened then. We had several politicians pulling strings and going by any dark avenue that they could to undermine the office of sheriff, and this year especially with the advent of House Bill 325, which was the legislators offering to, in their mind, to once and for all put this sheriff's issue to rest. But
well, I want to talk about some specifics about that event, if you will. I know it was introduced in the spring, and it got passed by the Senate eventually. But one thing I wanted to point out is some fundamental changes, if you will, fundamental changes from 1790s till now. And, you know, for example, my research of the grand jury, the charge by Chief Justice John Jay was, hey, grand jury, it's your job to investigate the crimes. Well, the Justice Department wasn't involved in 1793 when he gave that John Jay gave that charge in 1793. Why was the Justice Department not involved? Because it didn't exist until 1870. There has been these slow incremental changes, and the people running for office, they don't understand the Constitution, the history, the intent, the origin, the oppression that brought forth the necessity for a Constitution and a system of accountability, checks and balances, yada, yada. So these people get into office, they get into state legislator positions, county supervisor, all the way to Congress, whatever. And obviously something happened in the Delaware legislature where they thought that, well, let's just go ahead and take the arrest powers out of the hands of the county sheriff. So go ahead and tell a little bit how that legislation was passed.
Well, it all pretty much started when I started to express my authority through arrests and outstanding warrants. We have an incredible list of outstanding warrants here in the county, and I decided to pursue that avenue. And it rubbed some of the politicians the wrong way. They decided they were going to do something, and it originated in the county council. I uncovered some emails that basically were sent to me by concerned parties stating that the county council, once I won my election, they couldn't believe that I'd won my election. They knew I was coming, and they basically cited me as the C-man, the constitutional man, and I dare say that they feared my intent to bring the Constitution to light, and as it was intended, that is. And so I believe they thought it was a threat to the state police, the establishment of the state police. In fact, I repeatedly told them that I wasn't looking to be the county police per se. I want to just reestablish and reinstate the role of the sheriff, make it clear, and bring the role of the sheriff back to play in Sussex County, Delaware. The fact that we haven't been doing that for umpteen years was irrelevant. It may have been because of an ignorant sheriff that was here before that didn't do it the right way. Maybe he followed tradition. Maybe he was just part of the good old boys network. To me, it didn't matter. My thought was I'm going to bring it back. That's what I ran on that platform, and I got elected. And so it rubbed these guys enough the wrong way that I believe they felt threatened because I'm one of those people that will look into improprieties in government, and especially when it comes to tyranny, and I will interpose myself between people of the county that are feeling the tyranny from the government, and I know it's going on. It's going on in every county in this country, especially from the federal government to the states. It seems like people, even in Delaware, are losing the ideology of the Constitution, that the people themselves are supposed to be the CEOs of the government, and not the other way around, or the tail wagging the dog, if you will. And people often come to me and started asking questions back when I started to run, you know, what could you do? And that's when I researched even further what a sheriff can do. And I found out, among other things, the lawsuit that Sheriff Mack had filed against the federal government regarding the Second Amendment challenge that was brought forth by the Brady Bill out of
Washington,
D.C.
You mean the Prince? Yeah, Prince versus U.S.?
Correct.
Yeah.
I learned what Scalia had said in that ruling, and it just empowered me more to show that the sheriff is supposed to be the chief officer of the county. That was the precedent set by the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, and that's what I believe and what many other states believe, sheriffs as well, believe that that's the way it should be done today, because that was the intent of the Founding Fathers, to set the sheriff's office up as a balance of powers. And in fact, there's been several cases in the past, in the recent past, that underpin that idea and basically bring that to light. So I continued to challenge them. They became more and more upset. They decided, in fact, one of the representatives, whose father was a state trooper, a retired trooper, and he said to me in the paper, made no bones about it, that he was going to shut this sheriff down, and he didn't care what I thought. And later on introduced legislation from that was drafted by the county attorney, and from pressure mounting upon him and one of the sponsors, who later, that second sponsor, when the proposal was turned over to the Democrats in Delaware, that second sponsor made the comment in the paper that he's not sure this is a constitutional measure, even though he jumped on top of it, kind of like a let's pass the bill to see what's really in it attitude. But
so I'm trying to grab a bigger picture here. So the citizens of Sussex County, Delaware, are concerned of the growing federal government. Somehow they need the power of the sheriff. You hold on their heartstrings, if you will, in the sense that they got in tune with you, the power of the sheriff, protect us from a potentially bad federal government. You won an election, all right? You won, and then the Board of Supervisors starts to play some of these games. There's retaliatory games at the state legislature level. You've got, you mentioned on the phone last week, they tried to cut your salary down to something really, what was it, $20,000?
Well, actually, they had said it that way with previous sheriffs because they didn't want a sheriff to be a full-time compensated individual who would give his full time into trying to reestablish the office of sheriff itself. And, of course, noting this, the fact that we bring in $5 million a year in revenue makes no difference to them. They go ahead and align it with the fact that all that really money really belongs to them. In fact, they make no bones about it. The cars that I drive, the uniforms that I'm wearing, they remind me every day that it belongs to them. And that I am a department of the county, not an office of the people. Even though I'm elected, even though when I got sworn in, the document says right on my wall that I will answer directly to the sovereign, which was the people who elected me. They treat me like just as they do every other department of the county, an entity that is under their oppression. And the only thing that it really supports that is the fact that the state law, the Delaware state law, says that they will approve my budget each year. And it doesn't say that they have control over the budget. It just says that they have will approve my budget. So they've taken this, I think, way too many steps further than they're supposed to and what was intended. And they certainly don't give the sheriff any recognition as an elected official anyhow. They throw me into what's categorized as a row office. And that historically came from the fact that the offices of the county were in a row in the courthouse, literally next to each other and side by side. And they treated the sheriff much in the same way. And so over the years, over the past 20, 25 years, 30 years, it's been diminished to the point where if they know that if they keep the salaries low, $20,000 is what it showed on my last year's $20,900 it showed on my last year's W-2. And most people around the country cannot believe that it's that low. And why would I, put myself on the line to safety and risk my reputation and everything just for that type of money or that level of money? And I said it's really nothing to do with that as so much as I feel that God has brought me to this level in life and has put me to this task and brought people like Carson Tucker into my life and Sheriff Mack into my life. And, of course, you good folks that are getting the word out there that there's a role that we all must take if you are to claim freedom, if you're to claim your American standard, then we all know that there's a tyrannical oppression going on, and we've got to stop it. And it starts at every county level. Every office of the sheriff, I believe, can turn this thing around. But that's what I was thinking. And as I started to put more pressure and more press release out there that I intended to do this, I got more resistance and more opposition. And we got to the point where they concocted this idea of House Bill 325 that says we're going to fix this, we're going to take away the powers of arrest from the sheriff. Obviously, they feared me arresting people, and I believe it's a larger picture than that, but they're afraid of the powers of the office of sheriff because it comes from the people, and a watchdog, if you will, for the people.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, years ago, that's what I heard, is it was a simple explanation. Somebody said the sheriff is the supreme law enforcement officer of the county. He can arrest folks, of course, obviously street criminals, but he can arrest federal agents and state agents. I'm like, what? So why is this so? They said, real simply, because the sheriff is directly elected by the people, and he can be booted out of office during the next election. In your situation, the people want you, the supervisors from the same people, they don't want you, so you took it to the next level of filing a lawsuit. And I wanted to, I know you can't talk too many details about your lawsuit, but I kind of want to get Carson's, some of his view of where they're going. We only have Carson until another half hour, so I wanted to get Carson's input on the lawsuit and how you're fighting back.
Yeah, I can speak in general terms about the underlying theory, certainly, because one of the other interesting things about all of this, and Sheriff Christopher talked a little bit about, the fortuitous or maybe divine intervention of me meeting him and coming together and talking about this. I actually, being in Michigan, when I was doing the research for the lawsuits that we filed in Wayne County, which is the biggest county, it's where Detroit is, Allure versus the Board of Wayne County Auditors is an 1888 Supreme Court case out of Michigan, written by Justice Thomas Cooley, who is one of our premier justices on the Michigan Supreme Court in history, and who also is the author of the two-volume treatise, Constitutional Limitations, which is the premier manifesto, if you will, on the right of the states to govern themselves, and primarily the right of local governments to govern themselves. Constitutional Limitations is the name of the treatise, and it's still in circulation. Justice Cooley was probably parallel to Justice Joseph Story in terms of his knowledge and understanding and his writings on the Constitution from a state perspective, as was Justice Story from the U.S. constitutional perspective. But the Allor case stood for the proposition that, which I spoke of earlier, that the common law powers retained by the sheriff when his office was named as a constitutional office, and it is a constitutional office in Michigan, as well as many other states, the majority of states across the country. what that means is, as I said earlier, it gives him the constitutional imperative. So the theory is that if the common law powers of the sheriff were, and they certainly were, that the sheriff had the power to arrest, conserve the peace, to call out the citizens of his county on his behalf to enforce the law, if that was a right and a duty, actually, that the sheriff had when the sheriff was named as a constitutional officer, then that right is retained until it's abrogated by constitutional amendment only. So the only way you can remove that power is through the people amending the Constitution. And the more important thing of that, the three main things of that is, number one, judges certainly cannot do it, at least the lower court judges. And I would submit that the Supreme Court judges couldn't do it because, like I said, it has to be a constitutional amendment to remove that power. Legislatures certainly cannot do it. And the other side, the flip side, the end result of attempting to do something like that is it affects a disenfranchisement of the people. The citizens vote who they choose to enforce the law in their county on their behalf by popular election. And the moment that you allow a different authority to come in and try to infringe upon the sheriff's powers of arrest or any other common law power that he has, whether it be directly by the legislative action that the Delaware General Assembly has attempted to take, or indirectly by budget cuts. Sheriff Christopher, mentioned that, they reduced the salary of the sheriff to a minuscule amount to basically prevent him from being able to assert his authority and power. Those are unconstitutional measures that are taken by individuals who have basically running roughshod over the constitutional rights of the citizens. And so this theory of law, this common law rule that came out of the Alor case, it was also enunciated by a case out of Wisconsin about the same time by a contemporary Supreme Court, is the rule of law in our United States of America. And it's a rule of law that has been cited in many other states for the propositions that I have, you know, that I espouse and that are the controlling rules of law. And in fact, there's a Delaware Supreme Court case that cites this very principle, and it actually cites the Alor case out of Michigan, but that case in particular didn't rule upon the particular rule. So in other words, it was a Supreme Court case out of Delaware, but it never extended the rule. It basically reserved it for another time, and that was the applicable rule in Delaware. And I would submit that, you know, with all modesty, that this case here that Sheriff Christopher is fighting is the case that, you know, has the potential to allow a brave and courageous Supreme Court to do the right thing and to basically espouse that rule once and for all, as it should be. I mean, it is the rule of law.
So are you talking about the potential to go all the way to the United States Supreme Court, to the top nine?
When I say that,
of course, who knows what the state's going to do, the state of Delaware. But when we look at the formation of the Constitution, a person has to go into history and understand why, and they cited the British common law, and which is, you know, a lot of practice, if you will, by the British system, and the colonials adopted quite a bit of it, and it flowed into our system of laws, and of course we changed things with more specificity. Anyway, you are in luck if it ends up in the Supreme Court, because the Chief Justice Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, he's a history buff. And some of these other people may not understand history so well and how it actually does influence court decisions, but you have kind of a leg up there with Kennedy. Scalia is into history too. He cited some stuff way back, like the Magna Carta, but other courts, other justices have done the same thing. But I do want to ask a fundamental question about the Delaware Constitution. If the Delaware Constitution names the sheriff's office, and of course you'd have to go back to the intent when they wrote the Delaware Constitution, because the intent was what it was in practice, what was going on, and what they meant based on history. So I don't know if you want to comment about if it is in the Constitution or not of Delaware.
Yeah, I mean, Sheriff Christopher mentioned, and it is, and you know what I was going to say earlier is that Sheriff Christopher hit up on a very, very important point, because Michigan's Constitution only says that the sheriff shall be the elected law enforcement officer of the counties, or something to that effect. The Delaware Constitution actually contains explicit language in the article itself that says that the sheriff shall serve as the conservator of the peace. And so in terms of what that, I mean, you cannot be any more clear and direct in interpreting it from a plain language perspective, as you know, as you mentioned, the conservative Supreme Court justices on the United States Supreme Court would do, than to conclude anything but that the sheriff has arrest powers in his county on behalf of the people. To get the case, however, into the U.S. Supreme Court, it would have to come from a sort of a different perspective, and I think that would be where the disenfranchisement of the people of the counties would have to be, they would have to assert standing from a different perspective to get a case like that before the U.S. Supreme Court. When I mentioned the Supreme Court, it's got to be the Supreme Court of the state, at least at this initial stage. I mean, we do have the United States Constitution amendment, one of the Bill of Rights articles mentions that the Republican form of government is guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. So to the extent that would affect a disenfranchisement of the people's right to vote who shall enforce the law in the county on their behalf, then that's one possible challenge. But I think the more important point here is, in terms of the Delaware Constitution, you've got a case that has constitutional language that could not be clearer. And a lot of the state constitutional provisions that name the sheriff as a constitutional officer, even though we all understand what that means in terms of the rule of law, which I mentioned earlier, Delaware's Constitution actually has the very provision that Sheriff Christopher is asserting is his right, which is to conserve the peace. And there is, again, like he said, no question that that means the power of arrest. I mean, it's almost, you know, for people who, for common sense folks like us who look at that and say conservator of the peace, you know, it doesn't take much of an extrapolation to conclude that he has the authority and the responsibility, frankly, to enforce the law, which means to arrest those who would seek to break it. And so it's in a good posture in that regard. Now, you know, unfortunately, it depends upon the makeup of the particular Supreme Court of the particular state. Pennsylvania's Supreme Court has had a case pending for, I think, over a year now, since October of 2011, that is attempting to reinstate, if you will, the sheriff's arrest powers in the state of Pennsylvania. And that case decision hasn't come out yet, to my knowledge. But from what I understand in talking with the Sheriff's Association of Pennsylvania and the president of that organization, they've got a pretty good Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, and they think it's going to be done properly. Pennsylvania's got a good case that came out in 1997, Leak versus Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which really detailed the history, cited the rule of law that I've already talked about, and, you know, basically concluded that the sheriff does have arrest powers by virtue of his place in the Constitution of that state. And the United States Supreme Court in 1885 issued an opinion in South versus State of Maryland, in which they detail some of the history and the importance of the constitutional powers of the sheriff being that of the powers of arrest and those that were the powers of common law prior to his naming in the respective state's constitutions. I mean, you've got, I can tell, and I know Chair Christopher knows this, we've got the law on our side. And we're dealing with, for lack of a better term, ignorance all the way up and down the chain. And in some, to some extent, there is, a collective or maybe discombobulated conspiracy to remove what is essentially the powers of the people to choose who is going to enforce the law in the county on their behalf. And so that's what we're fighting. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be an uphill battle, but it is. It's not an uphill battle in my mind because we have the law on our side, but it's an uphill battle because our society has bred ignorance of the law.
Wow. So I'm just kind of summarizing real quickly. So you have, of course, you studied the history. Both of you have studied the history. You have a sheriff that is fighting. He has his own legal team in Delaware. He's got U.S. special counsel. You have got the Delaware Constitution going back, the history of Delaware going back. You have got other case law that's supporting this position. So it looks like you're in a really good position to keep moving on. I mean, it doesn't matter what the legislature says if the Supreme Court of Delaware reaches a conclusion that, sorry, legislature, the only way you're going to remove the sheriff's arrest power is if you have a constitutional amendment. That is probably your end goal.
Correct. That would be the only way in my mind, and I know in Sheriff Christopher's mind, that it could be done. And really, that's the right way. I mean, if the people of the state of Delaware or the people of the state of Michigan or the people of the state of Pennsylvania really think that what they want to do is divest the sheriff, their chief law enforcement officer, of the powers of arrest, the powers to protect them. The number one prerogative of government is to protect the people. That was stated by Justice Campbell in the case of White versus Saginaw Township. If that's what they want to do, okay, our Republican form of government allows them that right. It's not advised, and it's like Benjamin Franklin said, it's a republic if you can keep it. The ignorance of the people will be, you know, their own the sounding of their own death knell. But quite frankly, if that's what they want to do, then that they can do that. But what we're saying is, you can't do it by any other means, because that would be an unconstitutional usurpation of the people's right.
And at this time, and real quick,
and what,
okay.
real quick, Kelly, at this time I at least want to open up the mic to Commissioner Bill Sage, because I've had him here on hold, so I'd like to open up his mic so he can chime in as well. So here we go. Bill, you there?
Well, so, yeah, I'm here, Roger. Thank you very much. And
great,
Kelly,
great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for holding.
You're welcome. I'd like to thank Sheriff Christopher as well. Sheriff, I wish we had 83 of you here in Michigan. I really do. I'm a commissioner until everybody in. I'm founder of a Tea Party, became elected official, commissioner. Led the fight. I'm leading the fight in the NDAA nullification that gives indefinite detention provisions in a federal law, National Defense Authorization Act. And I'm a pretty busy beaver. Anyway. And currently we're doing the NDA nullification in the state of Michigan. And in the nullification, we have a provision for asking the Sheriff's Department not to assist in any arrest or investigation of any county citizen under Section 1021 and 1022 of the NDAA. Okay, just to fill you in. I don't have a lot of experience as far as Sheriff departments go, but I know it's one of the most important departments and the constitutional offices in the country, you know, and I appreciate it. With posse comitatus, the sheriff can form a posse and form a militia if need be to defend its citizens against the federal government on an overpowering issue.
Well, you got some good points there. And Sheriff Christopher, why don't you tell us the good news about Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona, how many people he has on his deputized posse? You're friends with him. Obviously, you're friends also with Sheriff Lopi in my county, whom I talked with today. And by the way, hopefully he'll be joining us here a little after 8 o'clock. And, but, yeah, sheriffs are getting it. They're getting it, Sheriff Mack.
Real quick, Kelly, and that would be 11 o'clock Eastern time for all the folks here on the East Coast or Midwest. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, sorry. So, anyway, yeah.
Sheriff
Christopher, you shared some really good news with me about Sheriff Arpaio and his deputized citizenry of Maricopa County. Go ahead and share some good news there.
Well, that is right. I am a friend of Joe Arpaio and Sheriff Joe, and he's a national figure in so much as some of the things that he has stood for. And one of the things that he makes no bones about is his posse. And what that is, in essence, is citizenry that is trained and armed and volunteer under the sheriff, under the direction and control of the sheriff, at no cost to the taxpayers. These people, often armed as well as persons with assistance in the categories of knowledge and research and history and just about everything that you can think of, even in the medical fields. Sheriff Arpaio enjoys retired investigators. No doubt most of the listeners remember the investigation of the birth certificate of the President of the United States. In fact, Joe told me himself that he ordered his posse members to go out and prove the President correct and right with his claim that everything is legitimate. In fact, he said to me that it just couldn't be found. The evidence was not there, in fact, that the President was correct. And some of these things that a sheriff can do, besides a grand jury, pulling a jury together, investigating governmental tyranny and all the different things that come from the word tyranny, if you will, of our government towards its people. Many people right now are talking about the Second Amendment challenges. Sheriff Joe was on TV the other night with Piers Morgan, I think his name is, and he was questioned about arming his deputies, and he made mention of a deputy that was shot and killed years ago, and he intends to arm his deputies, including his posse members, and especially his sworn deputies, with automatic and semi-automatic weapons to protect themselves and to protect the people of the county. If a law enforcement officer doesn't have that ability, then what's the sense of even having a law enforcement agency to do that. And, of course, you add the tradition into it. Sheriff Joe goes back and relies heavily upon the Constitution and his constitutional authority to do that, to carry a posse comitatus status. And when I mentioned that in Delaware, my detractors, I thought they were going to perform a self-scalping measure that, you know, oh, my gosh, you know, this sheriff, this rogue sheriff in Delaware, how dare he think that he has the power to bring and swear in posse members to protect our society from everything from drugs to the breaches of the peace, right on up to our government, our own government, reaching in, or I should say overreaching in, and taking away our Second Amendment rights. And once
well, yeah.
you give up, once you give up that, you might as well open the door, because there's going to be a flood of challenges with every other constitutional right that every excuse me, that every citizen has.
If I might,
yeah.
Are you familiar with Mike Raines from Eaton County, Michigan? Sheriff Raines started a group called Guardians of the Constitution. And what he does, he signs up patriots with concealed weapon permits onto the posse comitatus, and of which, if there's ever martial law ever gets declared by our president, it would automatically kick in the gentlemen that have the concealed weapon permits into be deputy sheriffs, so they could not have their gun rights taken away. I know. Are you familiar with that, Sheriff Christopher?
I am, and I've had that request given to me by many here in my own county, and I only wish that Kent County and Newcastle County, the only other two counties that we have in the state itself, that they too would realize and understand what this is really all about, is their duty as a law enforcement officers in their county, as an elected sheriff, to do just what you described. And that the importance of that is you have to understand the philosophy of our founding fathers to know that this is not only possible, but it's likely with regard to what we've been seeing and hearing across this country today. I mean, it's one thing that, you know, it could be something that, you know, and then you have the detractors, Ms. Feinstein and the rest of them, saying that there is no worry. In fact, Sarah Brady lives right here in my county, in Sussex County, Delaware, and that's the wife of Jim Brady. And that's the reflection of the Jim Brady bill that Sheriff Mack turned away in his own county, Graham County, Arizona. But yes, I've heard of it, and I think it's a great idea. I think it's one of the things that the people should now get themselves educated about, because it's all about the people to begin with, and that's what it really stands for.
Right.
Well, Sheriff Christopher, I want to ask you a question, and it sounds like Commissioner Gazer, you got some good people there, but I want to hear the good news. I know you told me over the phone, because you got more of a direct line to Sheriff Arpaio. How many people does he have? Do you have a number for the number of people in the citizen deputies?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, Sheriff Christopher. Yeah, how many people does Sheriff Arpaio have?
I know. I don't know if he's ready and willing to give an exact number. But there's, I can tell you this, I know that there is, he has some 15,000 at his command.
I'm going to repeat that. 15,000 people who are following the sheriff, they have concealed weapons permits, or they've gone through some background check. So 15,000 citizens are helping the sheriff.
And that figure may include his regular sworn deputies as well as his posse comitatus status people, but I can tell you that he certainly knows what he's doing. He has implemented a program that trains these people. In fact, it was questioned the other day on that show that I mentioned earlier. The insinuation was given by the reporter that, you know, you're just pulling people off the street, and Sheriff Arpaio made it very clear that he wasn't. He said clearly that these people are hand-selected. He knows who they are. He knows what their background is. A lot of the members, no doubt, are retired police officers, retired agents, retired government officials that have worked throughout their career to know what it is to enforce the law to some measure or another. And Sheriff Arpaio takes great pride and I applaud him for taking the action and taking the upon himself that recognizing that his county with all the people that are in his county, that's a huge place. I don't know if you've ever been there or read up on it, but I didn't realize so much that the county was as vast as it was and it had as many people as it does in the Phoenix area. So he is preparing himself for what may come down in the way of a challenge for the federal government, but he certainly knows how to be a sheriff in his county for sure.
Yeah, that's such an awesome example. I want to ask our commissioner here a question here first, but I did want to point out Sheriff Arpaio has appointed some of his the posse. Okay, I'll just call it what it is. We're out west here. We can do that. He has been asked and appointed at least for 30 schools in his county for some of his posse members to stand there at the school with guns. And, you know, some might think, oh, that's kind of crazy. But you know what? I'll bet you the kids love it. They go home. I bet some of them have heard the stories. And the parents are in great appreciation. And these people are unpaid, by the way. They're volunteers. So I wanted to ask Commissioner Gage here from Michigan, I wanted to ask him what his thoughts would be if all the other commissioners were like yourself, if the Board of Commissioners would be interested in funding at least some of the expenses of this these deputized guards, if you will, at the schools. What would you like to see happen as far as funding? And particularly the funding of someone just like Sheriff Christopher, who has had his funding cut. I mean, what are some of your thoughts here?
Well, I'm not much on extra governmental funding. I'm actually, I'm a patriot, okay? I'm all for posse comitatus. I'm all for having guardians of the Constitution where upon martial law, you have a bunch of guys in your county that become sheriff's deputies automatically that have a concealed weapons permit with the right to keep them. And I'm all for that. And I would be for putting a guard sheriff in a public school at this point. It's a shame we shouldn't need it. It's a shame that the real reason behind the shooting at the school in Shanty Hook, I guess it was the name of it, was actually because of progressive teachings through our school system. They wanted God out of our school. They want God out of our country. And they want to circumvent the Constitution. They put unrighteous acts on TV continuously. They take God out of the media as well. And then they wonder why shootings happen, mass shootings happen. So as an end result, if you're not going to arm the teachers, you better put an armed sheriff in there. I'd be all for it. It would have my vote.
Wow.
And I would see it as a decent – excuse me?
No, I was just going to chime in. And speaking of that, I do have a question from the audience, which I'll pose to everyone, whoever would like to chime in to answer it, of course, one at a time, is to ask, how many sheriffs are working together with Sheriff Mack to save this country?
Well, I know the first convention that we had in 2011 yielded some 175 results and with, I think, 125 attendees. Plus representatives, so we were up at around 150. The second was well attended as well, about the same. However, there was many different sheriffs that attended the second convention, and we are going to be planning something in Delaware in the near future to educate people in the Constitution and the role of the sheriff, and we are going to throw out there more training, offer more education about the role of the sheriff and what his responsibility, not just his responsibility, but his duty, his sworn duty, his oath of office is what it really comes down to. He swore or she swore when they put their hands on the Bible and they raised their hands before God Almighty and the people that, that elected him in and the people of this good country, that he said he swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States and that of the state in which he serves. And that right there is his oath of office, defend and uphold. And you can't get much clearer than that. And it's time for people to stop running around the bush trying to change the attitude and ideas and definitions of what we stand for as a people and go right to the action of committing ourselves, especially as sworn members of law enforcement today, and in particular sheriffs, as well as peace officers, but in particular sheriffs, because of their status as often as the chief law enforcement officer in that county, they have to make large decisions that are going to affect the safety and the lives of many people. And so they better start taking it serious. And let me underpin that with the idea that a sheriff is only as good as the people who support him, because if you get people that are brainwashed to think that the role of the sheriff is diminished and is of no significance today, much as it's been done in Delaware, you're going to get the same kind of response out of that general public that believes the sheriff is no longer useful and will be diminished. And when that happens, you're going to go right into a police state and rights that we're talking about losing today with regard to the Second Amendment is only the beginning. It's going to continue to happen. I'm no doomsayer. I can tell you right now, I go by the faith of God every day. But I can tell you this. I know that men are power hungry all over the world. We've got dictators across this world to prove that. And I don't believe that this country is any different. I believe the values that we've set forth by our founding fathers are being diminished, they're being laughed at, they're being ridiculed, and before you know it, they will be gone if the people of this country, and when I say that, I say every person in every county, because that's where it begins, if they don't sit up, pay attention, put their money where their mouth is, and realize that what they have at stake is their freedoms, their liberty, family, their children, everything that matters to them. Why do they go to work every day? For those very same reasons, because they want to have the peace and enjoyment of life in this country that our forefathers and founding fathers and ancestors have enjoyed. If we don't do everything we can to preserve it, we are going to hand our children slavery once again.
Wow. Well, two things, gentlemen. Hold on, real quick, Kelly. Two things. There was some background noise somewhere, so if we can keep that at bay if possible. And two, is there a website for that? I know someone's asking if there's a website where folks can go to in order to check out these things out.
Google. You can Google Sheriff Christopher or Delaware. You can Google the word Delaware legislators and put sheriff in there, or comma sheriff. And what I would also suggest is each one of your listeners, I challenge each one, and I challenge you guys, go to the CSPOA, which is the acronym for the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, and join as a serving member. And we're working on building that particular organization up, and the first and number one goal is to educate the sheriffs around the country and peace officers around the country of what their oath really means, to remind them of their duty to adhere to it and to serve the people as intended. And I would suggest that everyone go and support us there. These measures cost money. If I were to ask anyone out here, what is the cost of freedom? And if it mattered to be $100, $50, $200 a year to you, would it be worth it? And I say apply yourself to that. Let us work serving you and everyone that lives in counties in this country to see if we can get the sheriff to wake up and realize in those counties whom we've been challenged. And I think most of the sheriffs may be on the fence on it, and there are some that are outright resistant against it. And we're going to target those hard and try to bring them to come around to the understanding of what their real oath of office and service means to the people.
And there's still some background noise that someone could, while they're not talking, put their mics on mute. I apologize to ask that, but we do have some background noise coming from somewhere, and so we'd like to keep that at a minimum. So I'd appreciate that.
Hey guys, this is Carson Tucker. I've got to go. You guys, I really appreciate you having me on, and I really am very happy to be a part of this discussion.
Carson, before you leave, could I ask you a question?
Yes.
This is Bill Sage.
Yes.
Out of the 83 counties in the state of Michigan, what percentage and how many sheriff, county sheriffs would you say are actually constitutional sheriffs, such as Sheriff Christopher? And how many are involved with Guardians of the Constitution?
Unfortunately, Bill, I would say that would be only a handful. Most of the sheriffs in Michigan are aligned with the, quite frankly, the federal government funding that they've become weaned. We haven't weaned them off of that, and they're part and parcel of the same group and organization. And unfortunately, I've since 2009, I've done a lot in terms of trying to educate the sheriffs. I have several county sheriffs who are my clients. I counsel and advise many more. But it is only 6, 7, or 8 that I can think of that would be aligning themselves with the constitutional sheriffs at this point. However, that number has grown, over the past few years quite quickly. So, and I think that that's one of the things I'm trying to work on. You and I had a discussion earlier, and, some of these things, it's part of educating them and explaining the proper orientation to the right people.
Yeah, well, several county sheriffs do, in fact, go to federal programs several times a year, actually, at the expense of the county.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, the good news is, by what we're doing tonight, by we're communicating this great power, the citizenry is rising up in the sense of education. When they realize, oh, my gosh, the sheriff is a supreme law enforcement officer, they're going to begin voting. Voting for, obviously, Sheriff Christopher, you did this, okay? You appealed to the people in Delaware of your county, you won. Even though the county supervisors are opposing you, you won. As we educate the constituency, the sheriffs will be more empowered by the vote of the people. And this is one of the reasons why I'm beyond excited, because I've studied this, and it's the way it ought to be. And we just got to get back to our history. We got to, hopefully Carson's going to help, and your attorney's there in Delaware, you're going to win. And one more thing, is there a way to help fund what you're doing as far as the lawsuit? I mean, attorneys always want fees, of course. I'm an engineer, I want fees because I can't work for nothing. But is there a website that we can hook up to possibly assist with your lawsuit financially?
Yes, there is something set up under the Legacy Foundation. And it would be the Legacy Foundation /, Sussex, Sussex. And or you can go on to CSPOA.org and just type in my name, Sheriff Christopher, under the search category, and it'll bring up a letter that was written. And you could donate there, or you can send a check or money order directly to me. I would forward that you would just make it out to Niles, N-I-L-E-S, Barton, B-A-R-T-O-N, Wilmer, W-I-L-M-E-R. And I'm going to give you my email address if anyone wants to inquire that way. It is HorseForce1, all spelled out, and that's horse like the animal, H-O-R-S-E. And force, like Air Force, F-O-R-C-E, and one is spelled out, O-N-E. So it's horseforce@aol.com. I would welcome any inquiry or questions that people might have. And you can also go through the CSPOA website, which is very easy to remember, and inquire and have any questions that you do. You can also Facebook if you're on Facebook. You can Facebook me, Jeff Christopher, or Sheriff Christopher, and it'll come up. And I certainly welcome you to join the CSPOA Facebook page as well. I would ask that people not only like it or hit it on Facebook, but also join, literally join CSPOA to help us fight this cause. But if anyone out there believes in this cause and believes the freedom that they have is important, then I would ask you to join with us. I think it's very important that people understand that the sheriff most likely is the last chance or last hope that you have, because he's the only elected law enforcement officer that you have that serves directly to you. Now, that doesn't mean every sheriff will honor that, and that's what the reason CSPOA exists, is to go around the country itself to train these sheriffs, to teach these sheriffs, and open the hearts and minds of these guys that want to do the right thing, for the most part, I believe, but they are so taken by the many degrees of persuasion that the federal government has given and the resistance in some of their states, where they've been, brought onto the carriage with the reliance of federal monies. And no matter what it is, it's going to cost the citizenry in the long run out of one of their pockets. There's so many pockets now that are provided in the way of taxes and in the way of expenditures that we all have to pay for. But I dare say that if we continue to pay the federal government to literally destroy us in the future and our children, we ought to be able to devise a way to come up to stop that for as long and strong as we can, because if we don't do it now, I believe our future is going to be short with the way of freedoms and measures that we enjoy.
Well, you're referring to strengthening the 10th Amendment at this point, Sheriff Christopher.
Yes.
Yeah.
States' rights is what really matters here when it comes to the people saying, remember, folks, that you are the CEOs of the government. The government does not exist unless you exist. And, of course, a lot of this philosophy that they have is something that they've, they scare you with these tactics, but it may mean tyranny to the point of death. We have soldiers that go out there and die every day and give their lives every day, sacrifice everything that they have in the way of what they love, their families and friends and their home life. And the honor that goes with that is just unbelievable. And what we have here is the same kind of thing when our founding fathers say things like, we need fear, we need to fear the tyranny, not only of foreign governments, but also domestic. And domestic, for those of you who are not sure what that means our own government inside of our borders. We need to watch out for that. And many founding fathers aligned with that same philosophy. They realize that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And that's also in the Bible. If you know your Bible, you know that men are subject to corruption because of greed or whatever power they're searching for. And we need to really keep a tight grip on those things and keep dictatorship out of our government. And the only way to do it is to come together. And really, it's not about Jeff Christopher. It's about the office of sheriff, which belongs to you. It belongs to the people. And I'll come and go just like the next guy. But the hope is that while we have constitutionally minded people in those offices, and I know it's a constant total exchange of people around the country, but we feel if we can get a majority of the sheriffs understood and sworn back to the oath that they originally took, we can win this fight. All we have to do is tell our government we do not accept the tyrannical position that you take to take away our rights and our liberties, and I believe we can get a hold of that steering wheel and start driving this vehicle back up on the road.
Well, I totally agree. Carson, before you leave, do you have any other just final comments?
I think he may have.
No, Carson already had to take off, but I do want to put out there to the audience, whether you're listening live or be listening to this later on the archives, you will be able to find, as of now, the website CSPOA.org. You can find a link to that directly on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. So if you are listening to the archive, you'd like to check out the link, just go to the Get Involved page of the website, and you will see the link of it. And it will be, the button is called The Last Line of Defense, the Sheriff. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, thank you for that. And, appreciate the link to it.
Well, I just want a quick summarize what we've heard in the last hour, and hopefully Sheriff Lopey from my county, Siskiyou County, will be joining us. But what we've got here is we've got a sheriff willing to stand up for the Constitution and a historical precedent set hundreds of years before the Constitution to protect the citizenry of his county, to, if need be, arrest state and federal agents if they want to come grab our guns. We've got an attorney that is obviously with all his heart into this as well, who's researched this, who has found in the Delaware Constitution the explicit power of the sheriff to do these types of activities. We've got people who want to transform, radically transform our government, make it more federal control, which we don't need. We have got a group of people here. We've got team members. I sure hope that the constituency across this country keeps learning this power, votes in constitutional sheriffs, and the federal government just has to be, just has to back down. They're going to be flanked. Like, what do we do here? So I, you know, a couple quick stories. Klamath County, I mentioned it already, Oregon, that's near us, arrested a federal agent. Rob Hurd, he was sheriff of Tehama County, two counties south of us out here. Rob Hurd, he was running for sheriff in this county, long story. Anyway, he threatened to arrest some federal agents once. I mean, this is a practical, for real example. In my book, by the way, I got a couple examples of this. But in Tehama County, he got a call from a rancher, quite rural there in Tehama County, a lot of ranches. The rancher says, these guys showed up, they're federal fishing game, something. They're putting up a fence claiming it's a riparian area, and my cattle can't get the water. They're working on this fence. Rob Hurd says, I'm going to come right out there. So Rob Hurd comes out and talks to federal agents. And he says, what are you guys doing? We're putting up a fence. It's a riparian area. See, federal order right here, shoves it in his face. He's like, well, I'm the county sheriff, and you got a half an hour to get out of my county, or I'm going to arrest your ass and throw you in the slammer. Oh, yeah, you're just a county sheriff. You call your boss. You have a half an hour. They went to their cell phone, they called, and they're like, biggest question on their face, they left. The ranger standing there, and there's a bunch of this fencing equipment. The ranger says, what am I supposed to do with all this fencing equipment? The sheriff says, it's yours. There was another federal involvement situation, this is years ago, similar results. You have a half hour to leave my county, the federal agent did. There are several instances where the sheriff just says, look, I don't care what the law is. It's unconstitutional, okay? I ain't going to enforce it, okay? You got to go through me. I got the guns. I don't care. So this is our great power. This is our bulwark. I've been holding back a little bit from this. I mean, but I am so excited to have these guys here. And by the way, Sheriff Christopher, you have obviously on the line with us here, the commissioner here from Michigan. He's the kind of guy that you want to hook up with, of course, and the kind of commissioners you want. Although your county supervisors there in Delaware are opposing you because they don't understand. There are people in this land, and by the way, again, back to constituency, back to education, we will get to a position where the citizenry starts electing county supervisors, sheriffs, district attorneys, judges, yada, 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 who actually respect the Constitution. And this is done through education, what we're doing tonight. I mean, this is so fundamental to our... I mean, if we're in the 1800s, okay, this would be a no-brainer, all right? I don't mean to be so rude the way I just said that, but look, it's a no-brainer, okay? I'm preaching to the choir, but this is a no-brainer. The way we were and why we prospered, we just follow the Constitution. It's that simple.
It was a basic philosophy that we've come away from, and the reason we've come away from it, we've searched other avenues, thinking in our mind that we can rise above something we should never even try to rise above. there really is nothing out there to stand on if there's no simplicity in the way of rights. I mean, if you think about it, it's a very simplistic idea that was given to our founding fathers, that if they applied equality to every man in the country, we had challenges to that. We even had civil wars involving those things. But the basic values are, the Constitution really is about, as Mike Badnarik puts it, he's a constitutional expert, he puts it that the Constitution is about property. And the defense of property, if I give you permission to cross my backyard to get to the mall, for instance, I can revoke that permission. And you have to abide by that based on what the law stands for, and you will be basically under the scrutiny of the law if you violate that revoking that I had the right to take as just as well as I had the right to give it to you. So what gives the federal government, or any government for that matter, if the property belongs to you, to tell you what to do with it? And that includes your body. That includes your body. And the sheriff in each county, the only elected law enforcement officer in the land, that's why every county in the United States has an elected sheriff. And I say the majority of them do, because some of them have been changed. But to define that, if you stop and think, who would best represent me in a situation in my own county that I have against, say, some eminent domain claim by a federal government who wants to come in, or even the state government or county government for that matter, who's going along with whoever started the act of reclamation of this property that belongs to a private citizen, what do you do? Or even what you do on that property oftentimes is also subject to the scrutiny of the sheriff that you call upon him to protect you. Sheriff Brad Rogers in Indiana stood up for an Amish man who sells raw milk and cheese, basically had been doing that historically, and in comes the FDA from the federal government saying they're going to shut you down. And this Amish gentleman had no other place to go but to Sheriff Brad Rogers. And Sheriff Rogers stood up to them, told them to get off the property and leave, or he would arrest them. Now, they left. And it's just like anything else, folks. They're going to come back. They're going to revisit you. They're going to come back because they figure, well, we can outlast them. We'll return again and again and again. Most people throw their hands up in the air and give up because they don't want to be embattled in court, wasting their retirement, wasting their money, when it really is not necessary. All you have to do is go to your elected sheriff and say, listen, you swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. The Constitution is about me and my property and my liberties. Therefore, you swore an oath to protect me and those things under that purview. So if you're not going to do your job, then lots of movement needs to be happening in county after county after county to get a sheriff in there, elected in that office by the people, for the people, and of the people, that's going to do just that. And Brad Rogers, I applaud him. I know Sheriff Rogers personally. He's told me the story, and he's also, if you Google his name, or you go to YouTube and listen to him, you will hear exactly what he did. And it's amazing how the federal government knows full well that they can't stand against a constitutional sheriff, because it's the people, basically the power really of the office of sheriff is the people.
Sure. May I ask a question?
Real quick, gentlemen, I'm going to interject here. Is we do have, I believe, Sheriff Lopey on the line, so I want to take this time to open up his mic. So, Sheriff Lopey, welcome to the show, and thank you for calling in. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Kelly. Good to be with you.
Great. Go ahead, gentlemen, if we can give... I'd like to give the floor to Kelly, and then we'll go to Sheriff Lopey, and then we'll continue on. Thank you, guys.
Well, yeah, Senator Pelosi, I'm just really glad. You know, I met with you this afternoon, and we've talked before briefly, and I know your love of the Constitution, your concern where things are headed. We had a situation a couple years ago, which, by the way, you handled very well, because the citizenry out here, they're not ready to pick up guns and start shooting people. I mean, it was ugly. There was a specific quote by one gentleman. He told the fish and game officer, this is what he told me. He said, look, you come on my property without a warrant, it will not be a warning shot. It will be a lethal shot. I'm willing to go to jail. You need to have a warrant to be on my property. And so, obviously, he riled up a lot of people, and you dealt with this really quickly by having a town hall meeting. But it happened in the summer of 2011 when the fish and game showed up without a warrant with guns. They looked at somebody's water usage. The enviros didn't like that end result, and so they called the federal agents, the NIMPs. The NIMPs came out armed. We had fish and game show up armed at a town hall meeting in Fort Jones. We got problems, obviously, here, but you dealt with this very well. I don't know. I just want to get your comments about some of the overreach, if you will, and how you handled that.
Well, you're referring to the situation at the Jenners involving Noah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'll try to make it brief. We've actually had a couple issues involving this one rancher, and essentially what occurred well over a year ago is we had, I got a call, and actually I was in Colorado at the time attending a National Sheriff's Association event, and this rancher advised me, hey, I've got a NOAA, which is the National Oceanic Atmospheric Agency. They have an Office of Law Enforcement, which primarily enforces federal law for the National Marine Fisheries Service. So I got a armed NOAA agent on my ranch reading me my constitutional Miranda rights and working some kind of criminal investigation against me. And I said, well, what is it for? And he said, well, they claim that someone filed a complaint against me, evidently an environmental activist, that some coho salmon fingerlings, some minnows, allegedly died in a puddle in a creek that flows through his property. And I said, well, let me find out, you know, what's going on here. And come to find out, what happens in Northern California a lot is these environmental activists, they write these grandiose letters to these federal and state agencies, and some of them are very anti-ranching and very anti-farming. Now, in Siskiyou County, unfortunately, we've always had a rich heritage of timber, ranching and farming, kind of the backbone of the county. We have the fifth largest county geographically in the state, and we also have a rich history of mining and recreation. So, come to find out, this environmental activist files this complaint, and a lot of this is via letters and online. And when I returned a couple days later, I immediately try to contact NOAA. Now, they're on the coast, on the coast, and we're about 155 miles inland. And my question to the NOAA authorities were, what are you doing in Siskiyou County? I don't understand why you would come to my county and initiate an enforcement action and, you know, protocol and officer and deputy safety imperatives dictate that you contact the sheriff because he or she is the chief law enforcement officer in the 58 counties of California. And their response was, well, we got a complaint, and, we were with the fish and game. But come to find out, they're with a game warden from the California Department of Fish and Game. So I said, well, what are you attempting to work this criminal investigation about? And the thing is, They kind of downplayed it initially and said, well, we're just looking into this complaint that we received. I said, well, you don't just conduct an informal inquiry and read someone, you know, their Miranda rights. And what happened is, make a long story short, we had a meeting at my office. The officials from the Office of Law Enforcement from NOAA flew up here from Long Beach. And my concerns were, one is, why did a federal agency whose primary investigative authority normally rests on the coastal waters of California drive 155 miles into my county and initiate a criminal investigation against a rancher who, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the greatest citizens that I know in this county, and I'm not really close friends with him. But my experience has been ranchers and farmers are some of the greatest citizens. They're some of the hardest working people you'll ever meet, and they know more about the environment and how to protect the environment than probably a whole boatload of federal scientists. I guarantee you that. So I told them that I had a problem with them coming to my county without notifying me. I had a problem with them initiating a criminal investigation at the federal level when you had a state fish and game warden there available to work any kind of illegal alleged take of these coho salmon fingerlings. And I had a real problem with you subjecting this farmer to court action, because any criminal action, you know, these federal agencies and I don't have any problems with like DEA and FBI and ATF. I get along fine with them. It's just these agencies from outside my county that come in here. They treat treated these citizens without any dignity or, you know, respect to them as prominent citizens and as hardworking, ranchers in this county. And not only that, is they were going to subject them to court action, and the closest court is the Eastern District U.S. Court in Sacramento, which is something like 275 miles from their home. And I told Noah, I said, subjecting this rancher who worked, ranching is a 24-hour business, and this family, they would have to drop what they're doing, pay someone to take care of their ranch, and drive 275 miles one way, fight whatever misdemeanor or felony action that was going to be initiated against them. And then, the big boss told me, well, we weren't necessarily working a criminal investigation, and, he shouldn't have, the agent shouldn't have read, Mr. Jenner, his rights. This is just, to me, I felt it was, at least a borderline abuse of federal police power, at least in this case. And then we had another issue with the Jenners I'll mention really briefly. I got another call from the Jenners a few months later and said, hey, I'm getting calls from a couple agencies that want to visit my ranch. And I said, well, what is it this time? Well, he took gravel out of a dry creek bed that goes dry every year, and his family's been doing the same thing for five generations. And another issue was one of these environmental activists filed a complaint alleging that some cattle on his property was seen near a creek, and the cow urinated in this creek, thereby polluting the water and endangering the coho salmon habitat in the area. I said, you got to be kidding me. No. He said, that's true. And let me tell you what agents of the federal or state government were going to visit Mr. Jenner. And just imagine, we're a remote county, and all these agencies, a lot of them are coming from outside. We had the Corps of Engineers weighing in. We had NOAA coming back. We had the North Coast Regional Water Control Board, which is a state entity. We had the California Department of Fish and Game. They weren't really involved in the enforcement action, but they were going to be present. And then we had the Environmental Protection Agency involved. All these agencies were going to visit this rancher who's just trying to make a living. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what we had going on in Siskiyou County involving that particular rancher.
I'm still laughing, Sheriff Lopey. I was raised on an Iowa farm, okay? Cows urinating in a stream. Come on. I mean, God, I'm laughing. It's just like these enviros, they go to some super university, get politically convinced that they're God. And I'm just laughing. This isn't common sense. It's like you're going to take a livelihood. When did we lose our right to grow food? And this is how bad it's getting, okay? So what happened then, there was obviously a big upstir, you know, Liz Bowen and playing politics and a Tea Party meeting, by the way, which was probably 5 years ahead of the Tea Party. But we've been organizing because we have got these problems with the environmentalists. We have one of some of the greatest resources in the country, in our county, timber, ranching. We've got mining. Oh, my gosh. And yet they have successfully shut down a big part of this. We've got a lot of poverty, alcoholism. We've got single moms. We've got a lot of problems. Thank you, environmentalists. You don't know what you're doing. This is beyond frustrating, and it's come to the point where, of course, there's lawsuits, court cases. We won a victory recently. It's just like, oh, my gosh, the people are really upset because my simple Iowa farm boy perspective is, you guys have no common sense, okay? And so,
Kelly, I'll tell you right now, common sense has left the modicum of political thought in many regards. We have great federal and state representatives up in Northern California here. We have Jim Nielsen, who just got the state Senate seat. We have a great guy by the name of Brian Daly. And we have Doug LaMalfa, who just took Wally Herger's place in Congress. But I'll tell you, we had 22 lumber mills in Siskiyou County in the early 80s. I have ancestors that were in the timber industry. We have two now. So all we got left is ranching and farming, recreation, and a little bit of mining. These policies are ill-conceived. In my opinion, many of them are probably unconstitutional. And every time a hardworking citizen tries to make a living, somebody's slapping them in the face. And I'll tell you, and I've said this before, for about 3 or 4 decades up here, we've had some, and I'm not saying all, but some agencies up here have catapulted or exalted the fish and the frogs and the birds and the trees above the interests of these hardworking great Americans in Siskiyou County. And that's the bottom line. That is what's happening here. And you think, and people ask me, well, why are you getting involved? Well, you know what, as a sheriff, I'm a little upset that this is going to be a record homicide year for us. We have record levels of child abuse, domestic abuse, elder abuse, drug abuse, and alcohol abuse occasioned by all these people that no longer have decent jobs and have to go on welfare, get food stamps, and then they end up growing marijuana or selling methamphetamine. That's what is happening in counties like mine. Rural America is under attack, and most of the rural sheriffs in Northern California that I work with, they're all great sheriffs, see the same thing and pretty much agree with that assertion.
And speaking of, I'm going to ask a question I should have asked a long time ago because it came from the audience. Some from the audience have got, and thank you, Cindy, for the question. I apologize for taking so long to get to it to ask. And this is for Sheriff Christopher, and of course, Sheriff, you could chime in as well. But it has to do with Delaware. That's why I'm directing him. And she asks, could you ask the sheriff, what exactly was it that Delaware was doing regarding foreclosures that was providing them with revenue?
They have, in the state of Delaware.
Thank you.
Hello, John, by the way. Good to hear from you, Sheriff Lopey.
Thank you. Good to hear from you, too.
What they've done in Delaware is, in Sussex County and Kent and Newcastle County, they have created something in the way of a land transfer fee. And that fee is directly related to the transfer of one particular parcel into the holdings or hands or name of a corporation or even a private entity or private party. Every time that is changed, the state or county benefits by way of these fees, land transfer fees. When the real estate industry took a hit and it started to decline, it started to affect the revenue of the entities that collect this revenue rather hard. So they had to scramble to see what they could do to continue to keep the revenues going and what have you. So they would devise ways of creating fees with something that didn't really have anything to do with, an individual trying to buy a house. Whatever. It made it even more difficult for a person or a family to come in and obtain a home, especially if they wanted to do something like agriculture or the industry of agriculture to promote it. So they were kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And the problem that we have, that I have with it, and I think Sheriff in New Hampshire, Chris Conley, who's investigating some of these bank frauds, is the banks have a lot of the control over this. And they're buying back the properties and just buying up land left and right and leaving these houses and lots vacant so that, and of course, Sheriff Lopey will tell you, when you have vacancies like that, you have something called squatting. You have something called the setup of drug houses, because these properties they're never being maintained by the banks. The bank almost forgets them. You get people calling in as concerned neighbors saying, "Well, what's the deal with this empty house down here? There's a lot of unusual traffic in and out of this house," and you come to find out that there's some group or entity that sets up in there to try to sell drugs. Prostitution, you name it. It all runs the gamut. And this is all at the hands of the laws that are created by these state and county governments to create revenue. And again, it puts people out of work. It causes them to lose their homes. And I want to make sure that these land transfers are done legally and according to law, and if it's unconstitutional, I'm going to do everything I can to stop it from happening. And we're just now getting into that aspect of it. We've done a lot of research on it, and we want people to be aware of it. It's happening everywhere. It's happening all over the country. Again, Chris Conley, Sheriff Conley in New Hampshire is looking recognized and is looking into the same exact thing.
Wow.
Real quick, Kelly, but before we continue, I just want to make note that we have a little less than 19 minutes of live time left. So if anyone would like to call in the case if there is an extended version of the show, which, of course, people could call in to listen or to chime in at area code 347-945-7428. And if you would like to chime in the extended edition, go ahead and just push the 1 on your phone dial, and that will let me know that you would like to chime in instead of just listen. And also, of course, if you just want to listen to the archives will be available shortly after the show. And so we can, do it that way. So sorry for the interruption, gentlemen. Continue. I just want to put that out there for the folks, just in case we do end up going to extended period. Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Robert. Yeah. I just wanted to point out, and of course, Sheriff Lopey, we still got him here for a little bit. I just wanted to point out the excellency in which he performed his duties. He was, of course, saying, "Hey, Fez, what are you doing? I mean, the ocean's like way over there and you're inland, but the citizenry here, we were pretty upset." And so he called a town hall meeting at the fairgrounds. It was kind of an emergency thing. And he started beginning to, what are we going to do? We had not Wally Herger, but Doug LaMalfa came up, who is now, by the way, a United States congressman. He was our representative in the...
Okay, and that, folks, of course, is a large part of the show from back in January. But, of course, I want to... bring it up, and what I'm going to do now is, Kelly, since you were talking there, I'm going to reopen your mic, and I also see some folks who have been waiting for a while to chime in,
And so we will be going into extended edition and part of some discussion. So once again, if you'd like to call in, just go at 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to listen to that show in its entirety, go ahead and go to the archives, and you'll be able to listen to all of it. And so, Kelly, before I open up your mic, I do see there was someone on hold for quite some time, and I do see some others who are listening on the switchboard. I have a number here of 912. I'm going to open up your mic. Thank you very much for your long hold time and waiting to come into the show. Welcome.
Yeah, hey, guys. It's Gene Crane with the People's America, and I was just listening to the show. And, you know, one thing I would like to have asked those sheriffs, you know, they all say they're constitutional sheriffs and, you know, they're all, you know, pro-Constitution. If so, that means they stand behind the Second Amendment. But I would be willing to bet that every one of them have laws in their jurisdiction and arrest people daily for possession of a weapon, you know, whether that weapon be a long-bladed knife, a baseball bat, or whatever. Now, I'm not advocating people run around and you know, hit each other with baseball bats or whatever, but as part of the Second Amendment, one of the things that everybody gets bogged down in is the right to bear arms. Oh, it's the right to bear arms. And then that equates to a gun. And in modern-day world, everybody thinks arms, gun. But it isn't. I mean, you've got cities, especially up and down the coastways, where if you're fishing and you have a fillet knife in your tackle box and you get pulled over by a law enforcement officer and he wants to search your vehicle and finds this long-bladed knife, he can arrest you, he can cite you, just because you have an armament, you have a knife. And my question would be to them, and if you guys ever have the show with them again, ask them, you know, if they're so pro-Constitution, why are they arresting people for possession of deadly weapons? Not for assault on a deadly weapon, but just possession of.
Definitely, we'd like to have them on again. We'd definitely pose that question to them. And I doubt that the folks that we did have on the show would have been such as those sheriffs who would have, you know, arrested folks just for having that. But go ahead, Kelly. I know you want to chime in and possibly answer the gentleman's question, so go ahead.
Well, here in Siskiyou County, I have seen this many, many times, trucks driving around with guns in their gun racks. So obviously the sheriff here in law enforcement doesn't have a problem with people having fillet knives in their tackle box. This is Siskiyou County. This is what's going on. I know on the coast and other areas, we got some whacked out people, but in Siskiyou County, we're not like that. So,
I'm not saying that they're running around arresting everybody for it. You know, they have select situations, and that's my point. If you're pro-Constitution or if you're pro-Second Amendment, you can't be selective about it. You've got to be consistent. That's all.
Well, let me explain to you three types of people, okay? There are three types of people in political power, okay? One, who they have learned to despise the Constitution for whatever BS, swear word, beep, beep reason, okay? They're unreachable. Of course, then you have the other people who they love the Constitution, they get elected, and everybody gets behind them. And the third kind of people that are in political power, they kind of study the Constitution, and all of a sudden, the constituency is educating them quickly. They're learning very quickly. They're like, oh, my gosh, this is a really good idea. Now, we have got to work with them and help them and support them as they continue to grow in their understanding, because we don't want them to be replaced by the first kind of people who hate the Constitution. And, you know, it's one of these things where we have to work with what we have until we can get somebody more stronger, or they grow to the point where, my gosh, you've really grown in your knowledge of the Constitution. This is great. Expecting perfection and going at these people, patriots have done this so many times, they've alienated so many people, they've hurt our cause because someone's learning, and then their learning stopped because they were offended because they weren't perfect in their constitutional knowledge. We've got to work with what we have.
I agree with that. I'm not trying to alienate. I'm just trying to understand, you know, as far as, you know, all the sheriffs that was named in that, Arpaio, Christie, the gentleman in Indiana that stood up to the FDA, my hat's off to them. And he did a great job standing up to the FDA in Minnesota. In Missouri, just a couple months ago, the same situation, the FDA came in and shut down a farmer for selling raw milk and butter. You know, I, as a young kid, I had raw milk and butter quite often. I mean, you know, I milked a damn cow.
Right.
So, you know,
so did my grandparents, and lived to be in their 90s, and they were sharp as tacks.
Right. So, you know, again, I'm not trying to alienate anyone. I'm just trying to bring to the point, mainly is you know, everybody's up in arms about the Second Amendment, going to take our guns, going to take our guns. We've already let the concept of the American citizens being armed fall to the wayside. Yesterday, don't know if you know it or not, was the 245th, I believe, anniversary of the Boston Massacre, and somebody may correct me on the year of that.
It was, hold on, I got this one. It's 1770. In 1769, this is a little bit more history I've studied, Lackson did commentary about the laws, and the grand jury could investigate. Well, in 1770, March 5th, 1770, the Boston Massacre occurred. On March 12th, the grand jury indicted 9 British soldiers, and ultimately trial by jury convicted 2 of them for murder.
Yes.
So, yes, I'm well aware of this, and this was something that was leading up to, of course, the Intolerable Act for already occurring. And, yeah, the Boston Massacre is something we need to study. Oh, my gosh, John Adams. You know, okay, let me explain to you one of the most fundamental problems of our government right now. Okay? It's kind of a sideshow, but it's extremely important in our thinking. Obama doesn't have it. The fundamental problem with our government is they do not trust the citizenry. Well, what happened in 1770 when there was, you know, 2 or 3 times the angst that we're feeling right now? You had the Intolerable Acts, you had the Boston Massacre, you had trial by jury, and guess what? 7 of the 9 were acquitted in trial by jury. What does that say? It says the citizenry can be trusted. Our government has lost this. Here's the bottom line. When the government no longer trusts the citizenry, i.e. the local sheriff, i.e. the grand jury, trial by jury, whatever, okay, when the government no longer trusts the citizenry, we're over. It's done.
Well, and if we don't have arms, we're done.
Yes. But they have weapons that are just too scary in the wrong hands. Just today I found out Eric Holder, the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, is talking about the problems we're having with these drones, and Eric Holder basically said, well, it's okay to, you know, I think we ought to find really bad guys and shoot them with drones. Are you serious, Holder? Why in the hell is Congress not impeaching this son of a bitch now? I don't mean
well,
now,
also,
I mean yesterday.
You're absolutely right.
Also, that's something they're trying to talk about tonight with the filibuster that's going on right now about the COA. Please?
I was just going to say, yeah, with the Rand Paul deal, that guy, please allow me to interrupt, you already did, but, you know, Rand Paul's going to come up and he's going to do this big dog and pony show. Oh, you know, I'm going to filibuster this until I can't say no more because who thinks the president should have power to kill and blah, blah, blah. Well, that dumbass, Rand Paul and Rubio and a few of the other ones that's talking about filibustering, they give the president the power. When they created the NDAA and declared our country's soil at a war zone, that gives the president power to implement martial law. Under martial law, the U.S. military can attack U.S. citizens.
To clarify, to my understanding, Rand Paul did not vote for that.
He opposed the NDAA.
No, he didn't. Not according to the congressional records.
What? So you're telling me he's – I watched a YouTuber. He's saying the NDA is bad, but you're telling me voted for it?
He voted for it.
According to the
congressional records.
Hmm. Yeah, that's something I'll have to revisit because from my understanding, he voted against that. But, you know,
voted for it.
Go ahead.
Rubio, I was at Rubio's office, and the Libertarians of Jacksonville and several other groups were protesting the crap out of Rubio's office. And Rubio's standing up there today saying the same thing. Oh, yeah, you know, let's filibuster, let's this and that. But yet we give him the power, and now we're going to say, oh, well, Mr. President, we need to take that power back. We need to look good. That's just the Republicans trying to put on a good face after they screwed us.
Well, why do you think I'm a registered libertarian?
I have no idea. I'm a libertarian myself.
Well, good. Well, hey, I'm glad to talk to you. See, libertarians are serious thinkers. They have incredible brain power. I know we keep trying to fix this Republican Party thing, but it ain't working. Okay, we've got, 9% now, 12% approval rating of Congress. Both parties are duopoly.
No,
what's going on here?
Real quick, I'm looking at something right now where it says, NDA bill, how did your senator vote? And this comes from the it says International Business Times, and this is just the first thing that popped up when I was doing some research. And according to this, and we'll look at some other things if need be, it says Rand Paul from Kentucky voted nay. Now, I mean, I could look at other sources, of course, and but according to that, it says that he voted nay on that. But.
Well, I guess
well, here we go.
Rand.
Here's the U.S. Senate. Here's the official. Here's the official United States Senate page that I'm on now about the vote. And let me scroll down here, and it says it in alphabetical order, and it has Paul. Well, this is interesting. It says Paul, Republican, Kentucky, yay. But let's see if this is about NDAA. It says U.S. Senate's roll call vote, 100 of Congress, as compiled to the Senate, blah, 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 in direction of, on the amendment, number, okay, it might be on two different things. It says amendment number, it says National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year, that's NDAA.
Yeah.
Well, hold on a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Look up the original NDA vote, okay? There are amendments, okay? There are amendments. There are amendments. The amendments were a game show. They were a circus sideshow. They meant nothing. They meant nothing. They're only for political gain.
That's
now,
right.
Rand may have voted against the amendments because they were only a game show.
Okay, and this one I'm looking at says statement of purpose to prohibit the use of funds for the transfer or release of certain individuals from United States Naval Station, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. So this was actually the yay I'm looking at now was the yay was to prohibit the use of funds for the transfer release. So that might be something that was voted under the NDAA, but not necessarily for the NDAA itself.
Well,
we have to vote it's the original NDAA bill, the original, not the amendments. What did he vote?
Yay. He voted nay for the argument over money and the ability to arrest with, what was his name from Arizona? Help me out here, the senator ran for president.
McCain.
Yeah, McCain. Him and McCain was playing – you know, tit for tat about who could be arrested and without rights and what to do with them, and that's where the Guantanamo Bay and funding came in. Again, that was the dog and pony show. But originally, he voted yay for it.
Now, we're not talking about the – yeah, 'cause I'm looking at something here. Another thing says the 13 senators that voted nay on this year's version – of the 2013 of the National Defense Authorization Act, it says one of the nays was Rand Paul. So I mean, it's definitely something we'll have to look further into because it looks like there's a lot of votes on this. So,
well, find out the original when it was introduced to the floor, what he voted on.
Okay, so here's another article. Senators who voted yay for NDAA, indefinite detention of U.S. citizens, no trial. The ones who voted yes, let me scroll down here. Let's see. looking for.
My point is, whether he changed his mind or not, my point is in 2011, he voted to give the president the power and to declare the United States a national war zone. And that gives the president the power to bring the military on the American citizens. And
maybe that's why Eric Holder was saying, today, House Judiciary Committee or Senate Judiciary, whatever, Judiciary Committee, maybe that's why Holder was saying, yeah, we should use drones on American bad guys, on American soil.
Yeah, because
he thought
the
he
NDAA
had to get authority
would give it
from
to him.
Well, I can't understand. See, I've got a conflict of Rand Paul's actions right now with the filibuster versus, at the same time, his actions of, I oppose the NDAA. We've got to find his original vote.
If you go to, let me see if I can find it for you here real quick.
While you're finding it, I gotta tell you, there are disinformation campaigns.
Yeah, I've got here, too, for the fiscal year 2012, which it says Rand Paul voted nay for the 112th National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2012, date December 1st, 2011, 112th Congress. Bill was passed, introduced
was
by Senator Carl Levin, Democrat, Michigan, on November 15th, 2011.
So was that the original?
And this is governmenttrack.us or govtrack.us. But you've got something as well, Gene, for people to look at?
No, I'm looking for it now.
Okay.
Look up the U.S. Congressional Record. That would be the best source.
Yeah, I'm on beta.congress.gov right now. That's where I'm trying to find it from, because that's where I read it from. I just got to try and find it again.
You know, definitely, if there is something to uncover, I mean, it's definitely important that we do so. So,
well, here's something that, you know, I'm going to say this on Rand Paul's behalf, okay? He's got to get the rhinos behind him if he's going to become the president in 2016. If Rubio is getting behind Rand Paul, and I'm writing this in stone, and Rand Paul has shown himself by action, like his father, to adore and respect the Constitution, then he's got something going for him. At the same time, there's going to be disinformation campaigns against him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I believe you've, Gene, you've called into the show before, correct? Like during the primaries and stuff, the name sounds familiar. And actually, I believe I've seen you on Facebook as well.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I try to stay pretty well informed. I've gotten away from blog radio a little bit, but we're getting ready to come back. I just now, the state of Georgia is, within the next few days, going to have me my nonprofit organization papers, and we are going to really crank it up again.
Now, did you have a show? Oh, that's right. You did have a show. And that's something that I want to look at as well here. I'm in Ohio. But looking at something of that nature. So I don't know about nonprofit up because I've got some other things that I'm working for. Of course, files to do some kind of show for some kind of donations or something. I know one thing wasn't on Blog Talk when I was had a Blog Talk radio show, but I know I was working on some fundraising things during the primary for some projects we're working on for one of the presidential campaigns. But one of the frustrations of that is, I didn't have a 501 or 503C myself, and I considered getting one of those, and I'm still considering that as well for, other endeavors. But that's definitely something to check into, and perhaps we could do. I could pick your brain on that, of course, outside the show about that process at some time.
You know, looking on this congress.gov, it doesn't give me a vote. It doesn't tell me. It's in here. I've seen it, but there's so many other things that it just doesn't give me a good clear link.
And what's the name of your show again, Gene?
ThePeoplesAmerica.org.
ThePeoplesAmerica.org. And is that a blog talk show as well?
Yeah, it was blog talk radio. I haven't done one in a while. Like I say,
mm-hmm.
From October, I shut down and just took care of family stuff. And I moved to Savannah out of Jacksonville,
mm-hmm.
starting up another business. And now that the business has gotten its feet on the ground a little bit, I'm starting civil activist organizations here in Savannah. I mean,
okay, great. Well, we'll definitely like to have you on the show and talk more about that. So let's keep in touch. I may already have you somewhere on Facebook. So
yeah, I'm definitely in your Facebook. Matter of fact, Chris and I the other night, Chris and I was on Constitutionally Correct. I stayed in touch with Randy Shufflebean quite regular.
Yeah, he's been on the show on pretty frequently as well. Yeah.
Hey, I want to tell you guys about John Brennan's interview with the Senate. We had, I believe it was Feinstein. She was chairing the committee. And this was like, oh, my gosh, this was fascinating. So, she kind of starts out the hearing, okay, we're going to interview Mr. Brennan. He is blah, 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 credentials, blah, blah, blah. CIA, years and years, blah, blah, blah. Go ahead, Mr. Brennan, go ahead and tell us kind of a little bit of what you're about. About 30 seconds into his discussion, somebody from the gallery stood up and said, I don't like this guy. What about the innocent people who are killing in other countries? And then Feinstein had to interrupt. Security, please remove the person from the gallery. So, of course, the camera's turned on the objector in the gallery. So then he starts going another 30 seconds. Somebody stands up and says, look, I don't really like that this guy has the ability to authorize the murder of innocent people in other countries. Security, would you please go ahead and arrest that person, remove him? And just to note, any further interruptions in this hearing, we're going to have to postpone for a while. This happened about 5 or 6 times. And eventually, the Feinstein got so frustrated. One lady stood up. She's an elderly lady. She stood up, arm high up in the air with a big list, and said, here are the name of the innocent families that have been killed in other countries by our drone systems. Do you want this guy to continue this process? Security arrest her. That was the last person. They ushered her out. Every time she did that, a whole bunch of people wearing pink. This organization's called Code Pink. And Code Pink, they were standing up against this. We got to stop killing people in other countries when we don't have a war declared by Congress. This is what's going on. And so they ushered everybody out, and then they came back in one by one. They were searched. Oh, you're pink, Code Pink, out, 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 out. And then they continued the hearing. So obviously we're having, if you will, because, I really believe in only having a war when Congress declares it, okay? And it's just one of these ideas that, oh, that's right, if the American people want a war, they can write to Congress and, yeah, let's do it, okay? We haven't had to declare war since when? 1942? We have given the executive branch too much power, so I totally applaud Rand Paul. I probably didn't slip there with Ron Paul. Rand Paul, that's right, they're blood. Okay, so I totally support Rand Paul standing up against Brennan, because Brennan just wants to do the same business as usual. Ron Paul mm-hmm. nailed it. He said, look, we are creating more enemies than we can kill with our drone strikes, et cetera, et cetera. And he quoted the CIA's report on blowback. Why are we having all these potential terrorist problems and all these issues? Oh, that's right, because we're creating more enemies than we can kill. Gosh, the British Empire did this, okay? We happen to be lucky and kick them off our continent, but the British Empire was doing the same damn thing. This is called usurpation, turning people into slaves, tyranny, okay? We were lucky, we got them off our continent. This is a repeat, okay? History does not repeat itself, human behavior does, and it is. Oh, my gosh, I'm sorry, I'm starting to rant here a little bit.
That's okay, go ahead, Kelly.
I mean, but what I'm saying is, look, Rand Paul has a really valid point by opposing this Joker. And maybe he's got the political savvy to realize he's got to get the rhinos on board with him.
Oh, no, so, Rubio's already been up there, and a few others have already been up there. You know, I'll be flipping back and forth between the show and kind of keeping an eye out on the filibuster as well. And I've seen, you know, Ruby up there, and of course you had Thune was up there, and you also had who else did I see? Mitch McConnell. I've seen him as well, which actually I'd really like to get Mitch McConnell on the show here, because he was talking about lifting the federal ban on industrialized hemp, which is definitely something I've been advocating for quite some time, years. Matter of fact, and I am working on getting some folks on the show to discuss that. So hopefully we'll get a few people on to go over that. But I digress. That's not the topic of tonight's show, but since I did mention Mitch McConnell's name here, then it'd be great, you know, to get him on the show to discuss that. So about the lifting the federal ban on industrialized hemp. But we'll keep moving on with the topic at hand. Go ahead, Gene or Kelly.
Sorry, Gene, go ahead, because I've been ranting too much. Go ahead, Gene.
All right. Well, you know, I would like to say, you know, especially on the topic of the sheriff being the last line of defense, one thing that every citizen should look at is their governors. You know, everybody talks about the presidents and so forth, and they get big into the presidential election. But we should really look at our governors, because our governors really are the second most powerful person politically in our everyday life, whether it's, you know, mine in the state of Georgia and you guys, wherever you may be. The governor of your state really can put the leash on the federal government.
Or not put the, in the case of what might be turning out Kasich here in Ohio.
Right. You know, exactly. So, you know, the sheriff is going to have to abide by what the governor directs him to. You know, everybody has a higher up, and, you know, whether it's a county council, a city council, the next level up is the governor and our state and local representatives. But as a libertarian, as trying to organize the Chatham County Libertarian Committee, I'm looking at local level politics myself. And if we can get some local people thinking the right way about our true liberties and the Constitution and what it means in our everyday life, because I think the biggest problem that America has is that we all forgot about the Constitution. You know, I'm just as guilty as anybody. Until 2008, I had a business. I was doing my own thing. And then when the powers changed over and all my business went to crap and I looked at it and said, why? It's government. And I'm not just saying this about Obama. Bush did the same thing. And then I started learning about my civil liberties that got swept away. And when the Patriot Act was signed into position, I, you know, not being politically involved, but just keeping an eye on it from a distance, I said, man, you know, that's the wrong thing right there. That Patriot Act that gives them the right to wiretap and all of this other stuff. And I'm going, yeah, that's bad news. That's bad news. And then when Obama got elected and the economy went to crap, and then the NDA come in, I'm like, you know what? I have to pay attention. I have to do something. And I think a lot of people in this country got that feeling. I've got to do something now. I've been goofing off too long. So the biggest thing we've got to do is educate people on their civil rights and their civil liberties. You know,
well, what's really fundamental to this is waiting for the right moment, because I've found that I have been 5-10 years ahead of most people on this stuff. And in my earlier years, when I was in my early 30s, I was blowing it. But right now is a prime time, because people are suffering.
Yeah.
Because they're suffering, they're looking for solutions.
That's
and
right.
In that seek of solutions, we can say a little bit here, another day, a little bit there, another day, a little bit here. And then they start waking up, and then next thing you know, they become like you. They're becoming politically aware. They're becoming active. They're researching. They're educating themselves. And they're like, oh, my gosh, we've gone away from what the Founding Fathers intended. Why? Did the Founding Fathers intend, oh, that's right, they went through an enormous amount of pain and suffering and said, look, we, for ourselves and our posterity, we never want this to happen again. Here's a system of government. It's a republic if you can keep it. And we have forgotten the pain, except now we're being reminded of it. We have forgotten the pain that we suffered that brought forth, you know, the greatest nation in the world, not now, the greatest nation in the world.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because just the other day I was having a conversation with someone and we were talking about how, you know, now could really be the time for the libertarians. And my pro argument to that was this. If you go back to the Declaration of Independence and the forming of the colonies and the forming of the United States, the political parties became the Federalist and the Democratic Republican. Then, as the people's mood and environment changed, it became the Democrats and the Republicans. And now that mood and environment is changing again. And there is going to be another party that's going to come in and sweep the board. Will it be the Libertarians? I don't know, because Libertarians are so disorganized by the bare meaning of who they are, because libertarians is like, this is my world, that's your world, I won't tread on yours, you don't tread on mine, it's a happy day. And that is the weakness in the political realm. But there will be another party come in and take over. I'm a firm believer that Americans are resilient and we're not going to lose this country. But again, we're going through that pain, that suffering, that change of environment and the change of mentality that is going to bring another party. And what it's going to be, I hope, is the Libertarians, but I don't
know.
Real quick, Cal, I just want to chime in. It's, we actually did an episode here on Bard's Logic. You know, the title was something like, you know, is it time for a multi-party system here in America? And we had an expert on Irish politics coming in because they have a multi-party system there, you know, over in Ireland. So we had them come on. So folks want to hear more about multi-party systems and what some of their strengths are. You know, well, we discussed that just look back in the archives, and I believe, as I said, the name of the show or the episode is a time for a multi-party system in America or something of that nature. But sorry for the interruption, Kelly. I just want to get that out there for people to go ahead and check out. So you have the floor.
Okay. Are you can you hear me okay?
Yeah, both of you guys sound a little bit muffled to me. I don't know if you just aren't close up to your mics or what have you, but I just wanted to put that out there. So, yeah,
I think you sound fine to me. He's breaking up a little bit.
Robert is? Yeah, whatever reason, Robert, you're breaking up. But okay. Well, I gotta give our new caller here, by the way, I applaud you. Not just because you're a libertarian, but because you think. All right. So the history of the Republican Party, the Whigs were corrupt, they were bad, bad, bad. And then somebody had this idea, let's start the old Republican Party. Oh yes. Third parties never win. It just so happened that Abraham Lincoln was the – oh, that's right. He was the first Republican, the third party that actually came out of nowhere and won. Goodness, how's this happen? So, you know, history kind of doesn't repeat itself. Human behavior does. You get enough human beings agreeing, and sure enough, you get a new party called the Republican Party. We get enough people understanding the principles of the libertarians, we may actually have a third party again. And then the Republicans are going to have to wonder. I mean, they're like, the Republicans need a fresh change of underwear, okay? They're freaking out because, oh, my gosh, Romney lost. Oh, yeah, he's not a Republican. So, let's go Rand Paul. Yeah, let's go Rand Paul. And maybe appease the people, and then we go back to our corruption in 10 years. It's like, come on, people. I mean, this is – you know, I was registered independent years ago. okay? I just said, like, third party, whoever's listening, here's my vote, third party. I didn't have any direction. I just knew I can't do the R or the D or the donkey elephant game anymore. So we have the opportunity of a third party. And, by the way, I went to the National Convention, to the Libertarian National Convention in May. These people love the Constitution. And they happen to be the party that has the most political power. And it's time. That's the conclusion statement. It's time.
Well, I'm certainly putting my dollars on it.
Well, you know, we mentioned, you know, groups. You know, am I sounding any better? Am I still breaking up?
Now you are.
Yeah, right. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, you know, one, you know, talk about people rising up. I think back in 2010, of course, you know, I think a big part of the rise of the Tea Party had to do with the beginnings of Obamacare, and we see how the Republican Party has, you know, pretty much given in to that because now it's the law of the land right for right now, and hopefully some way we'll be able to get rid of it. And also, you know, they also, you know, Republicans funded things of that nature. But what I'm meaning to bring up is that that is kind of like what brought up the Tea Party, and we've seen what happened in 2010 with the Tea Party movement. They did get some, you know, some conservatives in there. A lot of them got co-opted by the Republican Party and then taken over by the RINOs because, you know, they wanted to stay in their positions. You know, like Nikki Haley is always the one, the first one that comes to mind. So, you know, I think something of that nature, but of course of a greater magnitude, is going to have to come about. Now, this past election, Obama's won, yes, but he won with even less votes than he won the first time around. That's because, at least, you know, in my opinion, I think even the facts would bear out that, you know, Romney lost, you know, vote-wise, count-wise, is because the conservatives or libertarians party said, you know what, we voted for McCain. In my case, I voted for Palin, and McCain just happened to be at the top of the ticket. But they just didn't this time. They're like, you know what, on principle, I'm just not going to vote for Romney. I can't. I love principles. I know that's what I couldn't vote for Romney. I voted for Bertram Good of the Constitution Party. But, you know, and I believe a lot of conservatives did that. I believe that in part and parcel is why Obama got in, because they even felt that even if Romney was to get elected, it would have been much different. What do you guys say on that?
I agree. I heard something the other day, and you're pretty good at doing the Google search and web search, but you can check this out. And I haven't had time to research it, but I did hear it. That if you took a map of the United States and you took all of the red in counties, you know, within the states, and you took all of the red within the counties, and then you take all of the blue, and then you match it with every NFL team and every NBA team, you'll find that our Electoral College, the way it's set up, that the sports cities is the ones that put Obama in. Because you take states like Pennsylvania, is red all in the middle, but a little bit on the right, you got this little town called Philadelphia.
Well, yeah, the big cities. Big city concentrations are where the Democrats, and those are, of course, the high concentration, high population concentration, you know, within the cities, those normally go towards the Democrat. And then you have your more rural areas that span. That's why the map looks more red, because it's, you know, kind of a lot of those rural areas. And that's, you know, historically for Republicans. However, you know, you get the big cities who vote them in, and that's why, you know, and you're right.
Is it my phone or is Robert breaking up really bad?
I'm sorry?
I was asking if it's my phone or if you're breaking up really bad.
He's breaking up really bad.
I hear you. Am I breaking up, Ed?
Shut down your Rand Paul, what you're watching live with Rand Paul, and you'll be able to.
Oh, no, I don't have that on anymore.
Yeah,
is that better?
Yeah, that's way better. Some application on your computer is causing this. Other word.
Really? Okay. Is this any better? Can you hear me better now?
No.
No.
Hey, Gene?
Yeah.
Can you give me a call tomorrow?
Sure.
Let me give you my number, okay?
Yeah, I'll do it over Facebook. Am I still picking up, Joe?
Well, Gene, what's your Facebook name, Gene?
The People's America. That's my page.
The People's America?
Right. Or you can find me under Gene Crane, G-E-N-E-C-R-A-I-N, on Facebook.
Spell it again.
G-E-N-E-C-R-A-I-N.
So there's Gene Crane right here, the guy with the hat on.
No, that isn't me.
So is this better? Or am I still breaking up?
That's better. Here, I can give you my number. It's 832-305-6194. That's my business number, and it comes straight to me.
Okay. Say it again. 832-305-6194.
That's it.
Well,
okay.
It may be. Great. Yeah, if this is better, it may be that this headset that I have, it looks like I may have to invest in a new one if this one's starting to break up. I'll have to double check this. Maybe I just didn't have the connection on, so I don't have that mic on anymore, so we'll see, you know, if that makes much of a difference.
It's working fine now.
Okay, maybe that's what it is. Maybe I didn't have it plugged in enough, or maybe that one's going out. I use that so often that I actually get through them pretty quickly. Oh yeah, I probably spend a good 11 hours a day, you know, on this headphone. So
I hear you. Well, I do all of my business through the computer through voice over IP. I know what you mean about going through headsets.
Indeed. Yeah. Anyway, enough on the breaking up around my headsets. We'll get back to topic. I do see that we probably have about 20 minutes left of recording time. So we can use that up if we'd like, or, you know, to go over what we talked about this evening, or what's going on right now with the filibuster. I mean, either one would be fine, because I think it's information, of course, that gets out to the folks. So, but while we have the mic here, I want to go ahead and give a plug to the website. Go to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. It's got some links there that you can see at the guests page, and then, of course, there's a Get Involved page that you can see some folks as well, some videos and some links, and actually there will be a link to tonight's show, and also the website that the sheriffs were discussing on the show tonight, or, you know, what you heard tonight. There is also a link on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website to that website as well. So I'm going to go ahead and check that out. So anyway, since I did that shameless plug, excuse me, I just need to go ahead and open up the floor to you, Gene, and then we'll go ahead and then move it over to Kelly.
All right. Well, here's a subject you might want to look into or talk about. In New York this week, there was a trial. A young man was arrested during the Occupy Wall Street movement, and he was arrested for assaulting a police officer, few other charges. And, you know, during the course of the trial, you know, these officers got on stand, testified that, yeah, this guy charged just like a linebacker, and he was attacking us, and this, that, and the other. Well, the attorney for the defendant said, well, you know, there had to have been somebody filming this. So they went on the mission. They got a private citizen that turned over a film of a police officer filming the entire event. Well, not only did the civilian get the police officer filming, but he also got the actual event where this guy supposedly attacked the police and so forth. So after all these cops testified that, you know, these things happened, they summons the videotape, and, of course, the cop with the video camera on live tape said, oh, no, I wasn't filming. I just had the camera. The long story of the short, the long and short of the story is that they had video evidence that this guy didn't attack anyone, that the police attacked him, and that, you know, the jury acquitted the charges. My question is this. Why have we not heard that the police officers that lied under oath on the stand have been charged with it? And why is it that, you know, we allow someone like the New York Police Department to go out there and, you know, stop people exercising their First Amendment rights? Now, I know a lot of people have come back to me and said, well, you know, they were defecating on police cars, they were vandalizing this, and they were, that's fine. There, if you have that going on, you arrest those people doing it, no question. But to take away everyone's right because someone did something bad, gee, that sounds like the gun laws. You know, once again, few nutcases go out, shoot some people, they want to take everybody's gun. And you know, I just want to throw that out there for topic. You guys can run with it or direct it some other way.
You know, here's one of the things that kind of okay, I cannot believe, okay, how many football teams do they have in New York? All right, a couple. All right, so I cannot believe the police came out saying, well, he attacked us like a linebacker. You dummies. A linebacker is defense. When an offensive running back crosses the line to progress his offensive maneuvers and move the football down the field, the linebacker stops him. That is the perfect analogy of what really happened. Well, you attacked us like a linebacker. Yeah, because you were being offensive, because you went on the offensive. Are you people that stupid? I mean, you know, I'm just, I used to play football, by the way. I was a 165-pounder. I was like the center, okay? I snapped the ball as a center of the high school football team, and I played defense on occasion, okay? And we just know the fundamentals. You went out with this, well, you know, the police, the attacks like a linebacker. Yeah, because you went on the offensive. Hello? And, of course, if the jury was watching their football and they understood it, they would say, oh, yeah, that's real simple. They admitted to going on the offensive, and we are not going to convict this person. Oh, by the way, a couple of other victory stories regarding the jury. By the way, I would encourage everybody to join PJA, Fully Informed Jury Association. A couple of victories lately, not just the acquittal in New York, but secondly, in New Hampshire, you know, just your classic pot, oh, you're bad, 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 do a plea bargain. No, I ain't doing a plea bargain. I'm going to go to trial by jury. They acquitted him in New Hampshire. In Minnesota, this is a severe case, but a dairy farmer was selling what? Raw milk. Oh, that's what cows happen to produce. It's called raw milk, okay? And the young calves drink it, they grow up, okay? So, this dairy farmer was selling raw milk. Oh, my gosh, this is the Department of Agriculture from Minnesota. You can't be doing that. We're going to put you on trial. And sure enough, the trial said, not guilty. Are you serious? Okay?
You're right.
I mean, come on. I mean, this is, we're talking our land here. We're talking, this is how people, like, actually live off the land and provide for themselves and don't get on social welfare. Oh, goodness. You're trying to put a guy in prison because he's selling raw milk. I mean, this is an oh my goodness. The OMG, oh my goodness.
Right?
The what?
Am I breaking up again?
Oh, you're okay.
Okay. No, I said it's not like he's selling poison.
Yeah. I'm just like, what has happened to our government? Oh, that's right. If they prosecute more people and do their jobs, they get a nice pay raise in the government. They get the TS 9, 10, 11, 13, whatever, by taking other people and putting them in the prison. What is wrong with our country?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry.
We get this law in Ohio. I think it's just such a stupid law. It's called, you know, they have commercials on it, click it or ticket, where if you're not wearing your seatbelt, they could give you a ticket for not wearing your seatbelt. It's like, okay, so who am I going to hurt if, you know, by me not wearing a seat, I mean, I wear it, but if someone should have the freedom to not wear one if they don't want to, I mean, who, you know, if you were not wearing your seatbelt and you get in an accident, I mean, how is that going to hurt anyone else unless you literally fly out the windshield and then hit something else and make somebody else cry? I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, it's Big Brother, you know, sitting over to make sure people are protected from themselves.
Well, actually, because of socialism and the idea of you're disabled, your own mistake, you put your head through the windshield, now you're a vegetable, okay? Because of socialism, I'm saying this very carefully, but I've really thought about this hard. Because of socialism, all right, where the state has decided to fund those who are vegetables because they didn't put their safety belt on, it becomes a business expense. And the state realizes, you know what? Let's see, we had about 2,000 people who were now vegetables, and the state has to pay for their disability because we're in socialism. So as a business sense, to reduce our costs as a state, we have to do this click-it-or-ticket campaign. This is a secondary effect of the socialism mentality, is that reduce cost by click-it-or-ticket.
Indeed.
I mean, it makes sense.
Not that I think you're right, but I mean, that's not what they're trying. Oh, we're trying to protect people. No, you're not, you know?
Well, what they're doing is they're trying to protect the state from having to fork out money. I'm not saying whether it's right or not. I'm saying in business sense, it is what it is when you adopt socialism, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's damage control.
Well, that and it's more insurance lobbyists. I would say it's more insurance lobbyists because they get to write the biggest check in those incidents. And, you know, those guys have lobbied for the laws to be like that. South Carolina, when South Carolina first came out with the law about seatbelts, it used to be an officer could not pull you over for just a seatbelt violation.
Right. It used to be like that here in Ohio, too. Go ahead.
You know, and then after a while, the lobbyists kept going, well, nobody's listening. And if they do pull them over with a speeding violation, they get a whole whopping $10 ticket. So then South Carolina said, well, you know what? We know how to solve this. We'll just make it the law where if they see you without the safety belt, then it's a $250 fine, and that gets people's attention. So now I wear my safety belt because I don't have $250 to throw at, you know, whatever local municipality that I happen to be cruising through in South Carolina. But prior to that, you know, I didn't wear a seatbelt. You know, and you know, statistics show that seatbelts kill people and seatbelts save lives. It's a 50-50 shot, guys. If God wants you dead, you're dead. End of story.
Well, let me tell you the new form of business in America, okay? So let's suppose that you invent a new product. It's called a fire sprinkler. Yes, okay. Hey, buy my fire sprinkler. It'll cost you $7,000 to put in your home, but buy it, please. And people are like, hell no. I'm already paying $100,000 plus to build this new home. I already spent another $50,000, $100,000 on a lot. You want me to spend $7,000? I don't think so. Oh, says fire sprinkler company. Got it. My marketing plan failed. Yeah, it did. And then they come up with this idea. Oh, let's go to the state legislature. Sure. I'm going to give them a bunch of money, and they will pass a law. And because of safety, we will get the law passed, and everybody's going to have to buy my fire sprinklers. And now in California, every new home has to have a fire sprinkler in it.
Well,
it is
interesting.
Yeah,
that was the birth of OSHA.
Yeah, I mean, if you cannot make it on the free enterprise system, you go to the government under safety. Yes, safety. Let's keep people safe because my marketing plan failed because they had a shitty product. Okay? Okay? This is a new form of government we're in, and it's out of control.
Well, that was the birth of OSHA. I'm waiting to see the version for the solar panels because right now the marketing plan for those guys are, oh, you buy our solar panels and our energy system, and the government will give you $8,000 cash back or whatever, you know, the deal is.
Yeah, I like solar panels, just to let you know, Gene.
Oh, I'm totally for living off the grid. I'm not against solar panels. I'm against taxpayers paying for them.
Well, yeah, that's true.
If you want a solar panel, go buy 1,000 of them. I could care less. Go buy 500 batteries to sit there and hold the charge for that 1,000. But don't take it from me, and don't raise my taxes.
No, I understand that, but one of the arguments, just to put that out there, because I am an environmentalist / conservationist, and one argument, you know, for us, you know, greens, as they say, I consider myself a conservative green, but anyway, or green conservative is what Newt Gingrich would say. But you know, what it is it's government subsidized the oil companies. So in turn, we say, well, wait a minute, if they're going to subsidize oil companies, why is it wrong to subsidize solar panels? Now, I'm not talking about Solyndra, you know, bad business decisions like what happened with Solyndra. I mean, even in the Bush administration, they knew that Solyndra was just bad business and they're throwing good money after bad. Now, I'm not talking about things of that nature, but I am, you know, talking about people concerned about or get upset about, you know, subsidizing solar panel production when they've been doing it for the oil industry for decades.
But that doesn't make neither one of them right.
No, you're right. I mean, neither one of them are right. Exactly.
That's like I was reading an article today about, should we still be subsidizing Amtrak? It's been losing money since, I think it was like 1970 or some noise. And I'm like, why the hell were we subsidizing them to begin with? Much less continue. But, you know, who am I?
Well, we can subsidize Amtrak because with the NDAA and the Patriot Act, we can easily load people in comfortable cars as we take them to the death camps.
Yeah.
Well, it's good as far as to say that, Kelly. But
I'm just cracking jokes left and right. You know, it's like, hey, you got a federal business? Go to
the
legislature.
It's 10 to 1 a.m., so, which that brings me to a point. We probably have to start wrapping things up. So I probably got about 9 more minutes of recording time, and I do like to end the show as I do every night, and that is by Aubrey Ashburn, and of course you can hear more from
Robert,
by going. Yes.
Can I get in a closing thought?
Oh yeah, definitely. We got time. Yeah, we've got some time, and
okay.
I am going to open things up for that. Just as I was, you know, going to say, I like to end with the song by Aubrey Ashburn, and for folks who want to hear more of her music, go to www.aubreyashburn.com. Go ahead, Kelly.
Okay. All of our problems come down to something really simple. The government no longer trusts the citizenry. They have passed laws that have offended the citizenry. They have to pass the Patriot Act, the NDAA. They got to fly drones over us, all this yada, yada, yada. Because why? Because we're ticked, and now the government is afraid. Oh, that's right. They're the ones who did this. This is the consequences. They have the power. They're going to impose it. If they would simply trust the citizenry, we go back to the sheriff. The sheriff, you're not trusting the citizenry, are you? The citizenry knows how to best elect their representative for the keeper of the peace in their county. That would be the sheriff. And, oh, that's right, they don't trust the grand jury. They don't trust the trial by jury. I'll tell you a story after I get done with my jury duty next week. They don't trust the citizenry anymore. We've got to change this or we're toast. You know, Bonner could simply stand up against Obama in the stupid sequester thing and say, look, okay, that's a plan. Ronald Reagan, he had 7% growth in his first month of his second term. Why? Ronald Reagan did what? Trusted the citizenry. Oh, that's right. Obama doesn't do that. Government is the only way to solve our problems. You're not trusting the citizenry. I'm going back to this. I can probably say this 10 times over, but you know what? Unless our representatives change and trust the citizenry to know and believe that under their own self-interests, they will make money, take care of their family, put in good representatives. Until our government gets back to that simple concept, we're toast.
And that's Melba toast. But go ahead, Gene, if you have any parting thoughts, go ahead, and then I'll proceed to close out the show. And, of course, thank you very much, everyone, for coming in tonight and listening to the show and, of course, participation as well, whether you've listened live or listening to the archive. Go ahead, Gene.
Thanks. And you might want to change that headset for sure. Thanks for giving me the airtime, guys. I didn't intend to come on and hijack your show. I was just coming in and listening to the interviews you were doing with the sheriffs, and kind of went along with some of the stuff that I was working on.
So was it breaking up again? Because I did put the headset
back. Yeah, it's breaking up really bad.
Okay. Well, it does look like we'll have to pick up a new headset before the next show. So I want to do a little test there. But thank you very much for letting me know that. Okay, well, at this time, I know you didn't hijack the show, and of course, you're more than welcome to call back in subsequent shows. So, as I said, I will Kelly Ashford, and since it sounded like I was breaking up earlier when I was giving up her website, it's www.aubrey, and it's A-U-B-R-E-Y, Ashburn, A-S-H-B-U-R-N.com. And thank you, everyone, whether as I said earlier, and now it sounds like I've been breaking up, for coming and listening live or through the archives. Of course, please check out www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And take care, everyone. Have a good night, and please enjoy the music. Take care.
Q button stuck.
Yes, it is.
I have a that. Good night. Interesting. I'm out of here.
Good night, Gene. It's just twirling around here. I don't hear anything. It is stuck.